Tonight on The Download, Chicago author Gillian Flynn. From the new movie, The Death of Stalin, Jason Isaacs. And another edition of the Chicago Accent Challenge. Now, here's your host, a man who is afraid to go outside tonight, Justin Kaufman.
It's got a, speaking of murder and mayhem, it's got a look outside here with the St. Patrick's Day revelers and the NCAA tournament. Every bar in this area along Michigan Avenue is jam-packed. People are staggering. A staggering evening here in Chicago, March 16th. Hey, everybody, Justin Kaufman. It's Download 720 WGN with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We've got such a jam-packed show tonight. We're going to do the Chicago Accent Challenge coming up at 10 o'clock. We're going to talk with Gillian Flynn. The author of Gone Girl should be in studio. She is headlining. She's the keynote at the Murder and Mayhem in Chicago conference tomorrow. We've got Download in Chicago Business. We're going to reload the news with Mario Smith and Amara Enya. So much to do, and we're going to try to cram it in. Break a little bit of format tonight and get right to the program. Does that sound good? I think it sounds good. My first guest tonight stars in the new film, The Death of Stalin, which is now playing in select theaters around Chicagoland. Actor Jason Isaacs plays Soviet general and war hero Georgi Zhukov in the comedy The Death of Stalin, which tells the story of the political fallout after the surprise death of Soviet Union leader Joseph Stalin. It's a political satire written and directed by Armando Iannucci, the same man behind the hit HBO show Veep. The film was a huge hit at film festivals, and because of the comedic handling of the subject matter, the film has been banned in Russia and other Eastern European countries. That's high praise. Jason Isaacs, no stranger to film goers, a great English actor, played Lucius Malfoy in the Harry Potter movies and has appeared in several other films, including opposite Mel Gibson in The Patriot. Like I said, the film is out in theaters now, and Jason Isaac joins me on the line. Jason, thanks for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. And I'd have to thank Vladimir Putin as well for banning us in Russia, since it's made us the most popular illegal film in Russia. And as we know, they're quite good at hacking.
It's such a great film. I'm really just blown away at how funny this story of Joseph Stalin can be. People know this story well through history. Talk about how you got involved, and then we'll get into what it takes to turn this moment into comedy. But how did you get involved in the script?
It always starts with a big brown envelope, and it said there's an offer from Armando Iannucci, and I thought yes before I even opened it. And I read this thing, and it is so sick and twisted and funny and macabre. I thought, it's clearly a mistake. I'm not known for doing comedy. It must be somebody's predictive text. And then we're trying to send it to Jason Statham or Jason Bateman by mistake. And I read it, and I jumped right in because the cast list was incredible. It was full of my kind of comedy heroes. And I thought, even if it's a disaster, I'll be going down on the deck with some pretty spectacular people.
Right. You know, you have a history of playing villains. You know, you've done that in your dramatic past.
I like to think of them as misunderstood heroes.
Yeah, there you go, misunderstood heroes. In this case, I guess you are playing a villain. The Soviet general is a villain, but he's very comedic.
Now, hold on a second.
Hold on a second there.
This is a man who single-handedly won the Second World War.
That's true.
He's in charge of the Red Army, and without the Red Army and their massive sacrifices and the millions of people that he happily sent to their death, I'm not sure that we wouldn't all be speaking German.
That's right. Well, at the same time, he also was the guy behind the military coup that took over after Stalin. But what did you know about this story, about Russian history, specifically about this Soviet general?
About as much as you could fit onto a grain of rice. I knew nothing, and I glanced at Wikipedia, and there were too many words, but there was a fantastic photograph of him, this man puffing his giant chest out, and he was wearing about 10,000 medals. And it told me everything I needed to know, which is that he fancied himself, and that I knew from the script also that he was the man who knew that no coup could take place unless it had his backing.
Right.
So it made me walk 10 foot tall on the set and kind of cut a sway through all these other rather terrified, anxious people.
There is something, just anxiety plays such a big role in the script and in this movie. It's so fun to watch all the hand-wringing and people jockeying for position.
Well, I mean, you know, in those days, around Stalin, people and their entire families were wiped out for just his paranoid instincts. And also, if he thought he didn't laugh his joke or he made an unfunny joke, at one point he killed one of his guards because the guard got slippers. So he didn't wake Stalin up walking around, and he figured that maybe the guy got slippers so he could creep up and kill him. So there was, you know, there were tens of millions of people killed and dragged off to the gulags. And the only person who could speak the truth to him was the guy I play, Zhukov, because Zhukov had the army, and no one was going to mess with him.
Obviously, that story, the story of Russia under the Soviet Union under Stalin, is one that is very serious, especially when it comes to all the people who lost their lives because of the genocide that Stalin brought on.
And it was very important. You're right. And it was very important to Amanda to be respectful to all the people and all the kind of tragedy and carnage around him. But the people who made that happen behind closed doors were the same kind of venal, childish, narcissistic, terrified fools that he's been making fun of for years. It's just that the consequences are so much higher for them.
You know, American audiences are very familiar with Veep and what Armando does with that script and how that played out and how we got to see characters behind the scene. This is very similar, if, you know, a historical piece about the Soviet Union history. But for you to be involved in this kind of production with a script that's a little looser and the idea of taking one kernel idea and really playing it out on set, how do you approach it? How do you approach getting into character in Armando's vision of this kind of...
You watch the film and you think it feels like a lot of it is improvised, but actually it's incredibly tightly scripted. So it's all on the page. And then you look around you and surrounded by, you know, Steve Buscemi and Michael Palin and Jeffrey Tambor, and one of the guys who plays the lead is probably the most famous and successful theater actor in Britain. And then a whole bunch of other comedians that American audiences won't know. And so what you try and do is try not to laugh. That's mostly what I spent my time doing, deciding who to sit next to at lunch and trying not to laugh during the scenes.
As a dramatic actor, how difficult was you to strike a tone, to find the right tone? Because this is a complicated kind of tone, because you're talking about very sensitive.
Right.
Yeah. How do you approach that as a dramatic actor to make sure you're striking the right tone?
Well, we're never making fun of me. The characters are all terrified. In fact, it reminded me a lot of that extraordinary press conference that was held soon after President Trump was inaugurated, where the camera went along and each person, each member of the cabinet, had to kind of pay homage to him and say how much they thanked God that they were born in the era of this great man. And the cult of personality around Stalin meant that they were all utterly terrified and fearful for their lives whilst they were plotting to see who could take over. So you're not actually feeling that funny while you're doing it. We're laughing at them, and it's really the laughter of discomfort. So it's not an all-out farce, this thing. The horror and the terror are present at the edges of the screen. And I think one of the great things Armando did is he changes the tone during the course of the film so that you laugh loud, and then you laugh loud out of anxiety, and then you laugh out of terror, and then you gasp.
Yeah, right. It's amazing when you watch it, because you do feel a lot of those emotions. Jason Isaacs, my guest tonight. He is one of the stars of The Death of Stalin, which is in theaters now here in Chicago. Armando Iannucci's directed piece that's getting great reviews. One of the must-watch movies of 2018.
I'll tell you what it gets, which is very, very rare. It gets a round of applause all the time when there's nobody in the cinema. I mean, when we're there finding a round of applause, but it's one of those things that gives people such a big journey. They laugh so much, they think so much, they're disturbed so much. They burst into applause, and it's a pretty lovely thing to be part of something.
To be around the people that you mentioned, and some of them being your comedy idols, and to be around professional actors, and Armando Iannucci, whose career is stellar, for you to have your own, bringing all of the credits and all of the experience you bring, when you approach this kind of work, where you know you're going into this kind of thing, but it may not be your background, what are some of the emotions? Are you scared? Are you a little off, not unlike the characters? Are you anxious?
Well, you know, I play the only person who's not at all anxious. He's incredibly confident and swaggering. That was acting for me, because you're right. I was surrounded by people who are at the top of their game and brilliant at what they do. But you can think about that for a nanosecond if you want to do your job properly. So, no, I wasn't anxious. I was like those children at their birthday parties when they've had too much sugar. I was just, I was out of control.
The storyline, of course, you know, this is one that a lot of people, and we're familiar with the story of Joseph Stalin and obviously what happened there, but we're not that familiar with all the players that came about. So this movie, in a way, even through its comedic telling and its political satire, does have a little bit of a history lesson in the way that you start to understand who the players were and what the tenor was the moment after Joseph Stalin died.
That's true. And in fact, one of the odd things I'd like to say to the audiences, who hopefully will all go and see it, is that pretty much all of the surreal, insane things that happen in the film really happened. And that's what happens around the cult of personality that strong, is that, I can't give away the plot points, but anything you think, well, that's ludicrous, Armando obviously made that up, really happened. And probably happened more so. He cut a bunch of stuff because they were so ridiculous. And that's what happens when people are terrified and they sell their soul and they're, you know, they're complicit. And once they're in, they're in.
to be involved in a project like this that has more implications than just what's on the screen, meaning, you know, the Russian government and some Eastern European countries are like, this is not, we don't like that you're messing with our history. We don't like it. It's banned. We don't want this in
actually,
our...
Actually, I tell you, you're right, but it's worse than that. The Kremlin, they gave it a license, and Armada went and did all the publicity there, and the reviewers loved it, and it was getting standing ovations. And then the day before it was due to be shown for the first time, they withdrew the license. And the statement from the Kremlin was that they felt that it was an attempt to interfere with their elections, which is probably one of the greatest jokes of them all. And my performance in particular was thought to be a great insult to one of Russia's great war heroes. Of course, what it's meant is that the Russian youth are all watching it online, and there was a great tweet of the guy standing under Putin's window in the Kremlin watching on his laptop.
That's great. Really, that's what they think. They think that this was somehow disrupting Russian politics.
Because, you know, that when they're not keen on people interfering in other countries' elections.
Yeah.
And Putin's obviously very worried about whether he's going to get back in as president or not.
Wow, that's amazing. I would never have thought that from seeing the movie, but I guess I'm not a Russian politician, so...
the thing is, it's not anymore... I mean, it is about Russia, but it's universally applicable. So people have often asked whether it was written about this administration in America, but, of course, it was shot before President Trump was even a candidate. And while we were shooting, Brexit had just happened, and I went to a commemoration of the First World War. David Cameron was at the day after he resigned, and he asked me what I was doing. And I said I was doing this thing about the scrabble for power when Stalin died and how everyone was stabbing each other in the back. And he said they were stabbing each other in the face in Downing Street, so they had it better.
Well, I wonder about that just because there is a great part of this film in which you all use what I assume to be your own accents. There's no playing a Russian or Soviet accent all the actors. And at first, you're like, oh, that's interesting. Is this supposed to be, you know, with Steve Buscemi, you're like, is this supposed to be a New Jersey car salesman?
But
you realize quickly that it means it could be about anything. It's relatable to any story.
It's true. And also, of course, you start speaking with a Russian accent all the time, apart from the fact that it's not very funny. It's also true, it says that they're speaking their second language, and they weren't. They're speaking their first language, and they came from right across the Soviet Empire. So they would have all had wildly different accents, because they came from Ukraine and Georgia. Stalin was from Georgia. He was particularly paranoid, because he was so uneducated, so he killed anybody who could spell their own name. But he was particularly paranoid about people making fun of his accent. So you're right, the Steve Buscemi's in there from Brooklyn. I do a very broad Yorkshire accent, it's not my natural accent, and other people do their natural accents. And it just tells you that these are people from all over the place. The only thing they have in common is they live in the shadow of terror of this map.
Yeah. You know, my last question for you just is to think about the dichotomy of, and really the balance between the Russian government saying that they're offended by your performance, and then you think about, you know, Britain can't get enough of your performances, Lucius Malfoy and Harry Potter. I mean, there's a real balance there between you are loved or hated in big parts of this world.
It's absolutely fine by me, except that yet another person was found dead in London, ex-Russian pattern. About a week ago, a man and his daughter were poisoned, who 15 years ago were exchanged in a spy swap. So I'm in a different film coming out later this year, Hotel Mumbai, playing a Russian. And one of the producers said to me, I can't wait to take to Russia. It's going to go down a storm. And I went, yeah, I think I might skip that one. So,
We'll pay attention to your career and how it plays out in Russia. Jason Isaacs, of course, a great actor who plays Georgi Zhukov in the new political satire, The Death of Stalin, which is out in theaters this weekend. I can't thank you enough for taking some time out to talk to us. Great performance, great film, and we appreciate the time.
Thank you. See it before it's banned.
There you go. Rob Martier, welcome back, buddy.
Oh, so good to be back. So good to be back. How are you?
I'm good, man. It's good to have you in the chair. And what a day to be back, too, with all the NCAA hype.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, obviously I always keep at least one eye on the news, but the other eye tonight is on the NCAA tournament. And the Michigan State right now, and I'll update the score again, of course, but it's early in the second half. They are in tight against Bucknell.
My son did his own bracket.
And?
By himself, without any over-the-shoulder action. We gave him his space to do it. And his final four was St. Bonaventure.
All right.
Penn.
Okay.
Lipscomb.
All right, so one's already done.
No, they're all done.
They're all done.
And the one that I was like, oh, that's not a bad choice. Arizona. And all four are done. And it's funny because this is his first time and I'm trying to get into the joy of, you know, this is fun. Look, you'll see who's going to move on. And he's just, everyone is wrong.
Oh.
And it's like in that sour taste in his mouth where he's just like, I don't want to do this. And I'm like, no.
This could be a father and son thing.
This could have been our thing.
Our brackets.
So, yeah.
Poor
it's
kid.
A, it's a busted bracket.
It's all right.
It's all right. One of them won today. It was the cutest thing ever, though. I think it was West Virginia. He said, "Did you Virginia?" And I'm like, they haven't played yet. He's like, I'm sorry, W Virginia. And I'm like, West, that's West Virginia. And I go, they won. He goes, yes. You know? Like.
Hey, real quick, I want to congratulate my son's hockey team. What was their name? I forget their name. Well, anyway, they made it all the way to the final. They lost 5-4, but I was very proud of them. He did
all right,
well this
there
year.
You go. Yeah. Some finals action.
Yeah. That's it was good. It was an exciting game.
All right, man. Congratulations on that.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Well.
Yeah. There's nothing better than a little hockey final.
No. It's good. It was intense.
Some stuff, yeah.
We should have sold tickets to that game.
You got to tell us. I would have been hyping that up. You know, I'm reading all these MyPillow spots.
The Silver Tips. That's their name.
The Silver Tips.
I'll
be reading the Silver Tips promos all night long.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time. I don't know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time. Ooh, it's business.
Yes, it's time for the Download on Chicago Business, sponsored by Signature Bank. This is our weekly segment where we talk with local entrepreneurs and CEOs to hear their stories so we can better understand ours. Tonight, a Chicago business has taken pet care into the next century. If you're looking to improve upon the experience of owning a cat or a dog, you would definitely say that the biggest issue is cleanup. Kitty litter or walking the dog always score at the top of the list of the top annoyances in pet care. But Chicagoan Alan Cook knows this, and he spent most of his entrepreneurial life addressing it. His latest product is called Brilliant Pad, the world's first self-cleaning puppy pad and dog potty. You may know that because it got a big boost when Alan took it to Shark Tank just recently, and he scored an investment. Cook is no stranger to the pet world, the pet care world, as he is the man behind scoop-free self-cleaning kitty litter, which he sold to PetSafe back in 2012. Alan Cook, the founder and CEO of Brilliant Pad, in studio tonight. Alan, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And congrats on all your success, and congrats on the Shark Tank. That's awesome. It's always good to see a Chicago guy do well there.
It was fun. It was completely surreal, and it was just an awesome experience.
The questions asked in that interview are very similar to this when it comes to pet care, that the idea of the Brilliant Pad, this concept of actually having a pad inside the house for a dog to go to the bathroom on. It seems like it's something that should have been, I don't know, in pet care, introduced to pet care back in the 50s. It seems like it's a no-brainer. Talk about this.
Well, you know, puppy pads have been around for a while, and the crazy thing is that, you know, you think of puppy pads are being just for puppies. You get the new dog, you train him on the paper, and then you can then take them outside. But we're sitting here in downtown Chicago, and there's all these big, tall buildings around us, and people are using the puppy pads not just for puppies. They're using them for the small dogs throughout their entire life. So if you're caught in traffic, you are detained at the office, whatever it is you have going on, you know, the pads provide some convenience and relief to hold the dog over until you get home to take him out.
When you're dealing with a product like this, one that, of course, is you know, improving upon another idea, what are the challenges of that? What do you have to think about when it goes into when it goes into making the Brilliant Pad work?
Well, I think there was a few things. One is we had to design three products. You think there's this mechanical thing that automatically wraps and seals the waste so your home stays clean and like odor free.
That's the biggest issue, right?
So there's this, people want the mess and the smell to go away. So mechanically, you got to develop this thing that's going to hold up to a live animal hopping on it, trampling around. I mean, if you ever go into like an automotive factory, you see these big robots and machines, and they're over here. And then the people, well, they're over there. You keep them separate, yet we have to create something where a little Godzilla comes trampling down the street, whips out a fire hose, and is like just a menace to everything in its path. So you got to make something that's really easy to use and robust in real-world conditions. The second thing is we thought we could just buy some puppy pads, put them up on a roll. You got paper, you got toilet paper, paper towels. How hard is it to have a roll of puppy pads?
Right.
And we got into it, and we learned, oh, it's actually harder than we thought. So we had to create a pad that was really absorbent, but takes up a lot less space than a regular pad. Because a regular pad, you put it out, you use it, you throw it away.
Right.
In our case, we wrap and seal and store many pads in a small space. So we had to get into some like a medical grade absorption technology to make a pad that's a fraction of the size as a regular one. And pad thickness normally doesn't matter, but when we have a small compact thing that doesn't weigh a ton, so our customers can easily pick it up and throw it away, we had to get creative.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and the third thing was, you know, cats, for example, will use a litter box with little to no training. They just instinctively, when they're roaming the desert, they know what to do. Dogs, on the other hand, need to be trained to adopt new behavior. So, you know, the machine works great. Dogs do what they got to do. But how do you train the human to train the dog to get the desired result? So we created like an online digital coach that constantly reaches out and says, no, you're on this step. How, no, did he check it off? Or do you need some help? Or are you still working on it? So it's one of those things where it seems like a really easy, simple idea. Mm-hmm. And then you get into the details and you're like, yeah, oh my God, there's a lot of moving pieces.
There's a lot of variables. Because, yeah. And in business, when you're putting together a product that you want to sell and you're workshopping it and you're putting it and you're testing it out, when you have to count on the behavior of the consumer mm-hmm. to change or to, I mean, that has to play in because this would be the best product ever. But if they're not training the dog, right, it's not going to work and they're going to blame your product.
And changing consumer behavior is really hard. Like, I have experience with other physical products, software, technology, and had a company over almost 20 years ago that was an awesome idea, and we failed. And you're like, where did we go wrong? And it was easy to point to, we were ahead of its time. It was easy to say it was too early of an internet concept, and that all was true. But at the same time, we wanted people to do something that was so different than what they were used to. That's really hard. So when we shut down, when we moved on from that experience, we said, when we do our next thing, mm-hmm. what do we want to make this next business have a higher likelihood of success? And we said, we want to do something where there's established and proven demand. We may be able to satisfy it in a unique and slightly different way.
Right.
And in this case, there is a world of puppy pads.
That's so true because you're able to really count or really dig deep and find the right way to deal with what I just said about consumer behavior because you know there is a need for this product.
And we didn't have to invent a new need. We didn't have to convince people to use puppy pads, you know, because there's a big and growing market. And, you know, it's as you look at all these like small dogs, like there's small dogs and big dogs. And it turns out that the small dog category under 25 pounds is the biggest and fastest growing segment of the dog market. So puppy pads, which were just kind of there, you go into the big retail stores and what used to be a small little section is an aisle as far as the eye can see. So we applied our expertise of making like pet waste easier to handle, easier to dispose. You know, crazy. A little kid, I wanted to be a fireman, magician, hockey player. And being the kitty litter or pet poop guy was never on the radar, but no, life works in funny ways, and here we are. And yet we come up with this self-cleaning puppy pad that really gets rid of the mess and doesn't smell and does all these other wonderful things. And the biggest problem we have is people look at us like we're crazy. I mean, we are crazy, but not for the reason they think. We're crazy because they are like, but wait, the waste goes where? And it's going to stay in my house? Mm-hmm. And doesn't that smell? And we're like, no, it really doesn't. And we can explain away all that we do to make that mess go away. But people, again, bring a new set of preconceptions. And how do you, this product is all this wonderful stuff, but we spend more time over anything else explaining and convincing people why it works. And that's like what I think the biggest benefit from Shark Tank for us is, one of the sharks said, let me see that dirty roll. Right. It was cracking all jokes about how it's going to smell, and then takes a big whiff and is like, I'm really surprised. I'm really impressed.
What's great about it is that you can see through your career. I mean, just reading about you, even looking at the jobs that you've done and the places where you've been CEO and entrepreneur before, you can see how you have moved forward in your career. You've moved forward and taken on challenges and continue to use the expertise and the lessons that you've learned to continue to, I don't want to say, it's not even disrupting the business, it's improving upon a business, something that I think everybody just assumes that the world should be working on.
I mean, it's one of those things that in hindsight, you're like, oh my God, that's so obvious. And we look back on other things that even with the litter box, it was a litter box you can leave alone for a month at a time. And now it's one of the best-selling automatic ones in the category. But at the time, people looked at us like we were nuts and crazy. And yet, you know, and they said, well, why don't you use this technology or this features or this other stuff? And we said, because we spend a lot of time thinking about what's the problem we're trying to solve. And technology, in our opinion, is a tool to solve a problem. We will geek out about all the different things that go into it, but our experience is customers don't care. And I think what makes us successful, we spend a lot of time figuring out what's the problem we're trying to solve and why are we better than others. It's not because we're more talented or smarter, but I think we've done a better job defining the key challenge.
Yeah.
And then whenever we have to make trade-offs, because you can't do, for whatever reason, whatever comes up, no, my engineering team, my production team, my marketing team all understand the specific problem we're trying to solve. And, you know, and the engineers can say the marketers want to do this. And the production people say the engineers are solving for that. They may not agree with, or you know, they may have a different point of view of how to move forward. But what makes our team so effective is we understand all those dynamics and we can take it all back to what are we solving for? Yeah. What's important to the customer to drive it forward?
Alan Cook is the founder and CEO of Brilliant Pad. He's in studio tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll continue the conversation here on the Download in Chicago Business. So stay with us.
It's business time.
It's Download on Chicago Business here, sponsored by Signature Bank. In studio, Alan Cook. He's the founder and CEO of Brilliant Pad, which is the world's first self-cleaning puppy pad and dog potty. And, you know, we're talking about the challenges of just the R&D and being able to put a prototype out, but also then be able to get it out there to people and actually get consumer habits up to speed. I would think that the work that you're doing, and you mentioned it right before the break about kitty litter, where now it almost is a no-brainer for cat owners to say, I need to have one of these automatic kitty litters. You were one of the first to do that, and you were able to sell your product. And now I don't know if anyone goes back to the old way of scooping litter because these things are really ingenious. It's going to be the same with adult dog potty, self-cleaning pads. How do you keep up with that when the big dogs, no pun intended, start turning their attention and become competition?
Well, you read and hear a lot about companies that spend time with patents and intellectual property. And, you know, even with our kitty litter experience, you know, we were involved in some messy, complicated patent litigation.
Really?
We were not the first automatic self-cleaning litter box, but generally, you know, put out what people sometimes say is like the best one. And the incumbent company did not like, well, they had a market, and then someone came up with a better mousetrap. And we were small. We were focused. We didn't, you know, that we tried a variety of products, and the things that didn't work really bothered us. And we thought really hard of how to improve upon and make it better. And we did what we practiced, what we believe to be product development 101. And what we learned is, why does innovation often come from smaller, newer companies? I mean, look at the big apps you use on your phone. No, how many of these companies existed 10 years ago?
Right.
And yet they're the ones that you go to hail a cab and make restaurant reservations and do all the other things that you do. And what we've learned is, especially like when we sold our last company, we had a dozen people that can fit in a small room. What we lacked in process and structure, we overcame by just bringing people together and talking everything through. When we sold our products to another company, they had several hundred people, and they can't just scrum and just figure things out. So they have very clearly defined roles and responsibilities, and it makes them tremendously efficient at each specific activity. But if something, you know, we kind of say, can they hit a curveball? If something lands outside a defined role,
right,
they're not necessarily set up to bring the different people together to figure out that specific issue. And it's not because one approach is better or worse than the other, but it's different. So we often find a lot of the innovations in the industry come from outside the larger, more established companies. It's people that say, you know, I had this personal experience. I really wish this was better. And then they kind of go off and work at it.
Does the goal become for an entrepreneur like yourself with success before of selling a concept to sell again? I mean, is the idea to be, hey, you know, big pet care companies, look at me, you should get this, you should come buy my company?
It's a little bit weird because years ago, you know, when we would say, hey, no, hey, Mr. Big Company, we have this going on, they kind of like looked at you and it's kind of like, eh, whatever. Now it's a different conversation. We're like, hey, we know what you did before. You have a track record. We understand where this is going. So we have conversations, and it's not as much a debate, but it's a discussion of what do we want to do with it.
Right.
And it's a little bit different. It's one nice thing of having some success behind you is you can be a little bit more discerning in the opportunities you want to take going forward. So, you know, we think through, you know, we can think through like revenue and cash flow and valuation multiples and have a wonky finance conversation. But we also think about what are the specific problems we like to solve. And when you look at our team, we've been working together for between 15 and 20 years. The new guy on the team, he's only been with us for 13 years. So, you know, there's a reason after we sold the last one and took some time off that we kind of reformed, because we love solving hard problems. We love working with each other, you know, and we want to do things that, you know, there's a great financial and business case around everything we do, along with solving a really hard problem and doing it with cool people.
And I was going to say, and I would assume if you have a group of people you worked with for that long, you know the intentions of what the goal is for the company. It's not like you and you got a bunch of people who've been there for 3 months and they, you know, you make the decisions and they're not involved. I mean, that would assume that there's more collaboration about what the goal is for a brilliant pad.
And everyone has very strong opinions. Well, not just strong opinions, but everyone understands what we're collectively solving for. So for us, it's less about ownership and are we an independent company or part of something else? You know, I think there's flexibility on the form. What is important to us is what are we doing and who are we doing it with and how do we engage and manage our day-to-day? That we have a very strong opinion on.
All right, my last question tonight is really, I ask a lot of entrepreneurs this, but what about, why Chicago? I mean, this is a company, again, that doesn't have any specific, I mean, the consumer base is at the world at this point. It's not just why stay here? What is it about Chicago that keeps you here as an entrepreneur in this town?
Well, Chicago, you know, entrepreneurship in Chicago is an interesting place because while I grew up here in the north suburbs, I went to college on the East Coast and stayed for work. And ultimately, it was family that brought me back to Chicago. What I love about the city is there's a work ethic, there are values, there's a certain thing you look people in the eye and you know that it means something. I place a great deal of value on that. The flip side is our team is distributed. While some of us are in Chicago, we have someone in Boston, someone in Baltimore, and all the rest.
Right.
So we spend a lot of time on Skype and just, you know, using various technologies that bring people together, even though they're physically far apart. And there's something nice about being central. And I mean, it sounds kind of crazy, but our work does take us all over the world. We have awesome airports that we can fly nonstop anywhere at any time.
Yeah.
And it's a nice balance. And there's really no better place to be in the summer either.
Alan Cook is the founder and CEO of Brilliant Pad, the world's first self-cleaning puppy pad and dog potty. He also had the scoop-free self-cleaning kitty litter, which he sold to PetSafe back in 2012. Alan, great to meet you. Thanks for coming and being my guest in the Download Chicago Business. Appreciate it.
Thanks. This was a lot of fun.
It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. It's time to reload this week's news. The biggest stories, the winners, the losers, the overreported, the underreported. What story took you down the rabbit hole and which story will be remembered from this week? In studio tonight, Amara Enya and Mario Smith. Amara, an educator, an activist, a former candidate for mayor. Are you going to announce something soon?
Lord.
Are you going to do it again?
Let's get past March 20th. Can we do that?
Today would be a good day to
today would be
say
a good
it
day, right? Right, right, right opposite the NCAA tournament,
right.
St. Patrick's Day reveling. I mean,
yeah,
right now would be
yeah
the time to do it. And I Mario do Smith, of course, the hey poet and commentator here in Chicago, and also radio host on Lumpin'. When do we hear you?
Every Thursday, 2 p.m.
Every Thursday, 2 p.m.
And Tuesdays at 10:30, they do a rebroadcast of my show
nice
now.
All
Look at me.
Cool. Finally giving you the respect you deserve.
Yeah, somebody in this town. Took them long enough.
All right, let's get right to the biggest stories of the week. We kind of all agree this has been a big week for news, but the Wednesday walkout, the kids across the country rocking out for violence and safety issues, and the debate that has come from that, including today, the story continues with some area high schools saying that the detentions and suspensions will be handed out from kids walking out. Why was this the biggest story of the week, Amara?
Well, I think just the sheer scale of the walkout. This was something that happened across the country. High schoolers, so it was young people who designated Wednesday as walkout day. And it was a unified action across the country. So I think that was what made it newsworthy.
What do you think, Mario?
Same. I think the power of these young people who don't really know each other, but to be able from all around the United States to say, this is the day we're doing it, this is what time we're doing it, this is how long we're going to do it. It was beautiful. I loved it. Yeah, I loved it.
It was great. I mean, obviously in the Chicago area, thousands of kids in the Chicago area as well as the suburbs, I mean, walked out downstate. And today we saw really the crux of it, where stories came out, I think it was from Downers Grove and some other areas, that said, we're going to follow up with our threats, the administrator's threats of detentions and suspensions. You don't get off scot-free for walking out of class. All right, so that's the conflict of the story. That's what makes it the biggest week. I mean, what do you think of that? What do you think of the idea of these schools? Because some administrators and some schools have said, hey, this was a learning experience, a teaching experience, if you will. Let's forego the punishment. But some schools are standing pat.
You go ahead.
Well, I mean,
future mayor.
I guess if they had outlined that there were consequences to the walkout, then fine. That's the meaning of civil disobedience, is that you are disobedient to whatever established rules or structures are in place. So I can't necessarily fault the schools, but I also think that they have to be aware of what message they're sending when kids have taken it upon themselves to use their voice, and how are they supporting that? Because this is a teaching moment for the kids as well.
It's also kind of ridiculous to... These young people are basically in school with, in the back of their mind, somebody might try to come and shoot us.
Yeah.
One of my classmates might not be stable enough to handle this and might go off on everybody. The idea that they have to walk out to protest terrible gun laws in this country is one thing. But then as an administrator, you go, well, this is too much. Mm-hmm. You can't walk out of school because you're afraid of being in school. I just think it's egregious that they would suspend or detain.
But again,
if it was me and I got suspended or detained, I would probably wear that like a badge all day.
Well, I agree in the sense that, and maybe not with the terrible gun law part, because I'm not sure that the laws are terrible. But I will say that if you are having school shooting after school shooting after school shooting, and all you're getting is thoughts and prayers and thoughts and prayers, and there are no changes with any of the laws, whether at the local, state, or national level, hoping that it just kind of goes away, I can understand why kids who are the victims in this case would want to stand up and be heard, regardless if they're familiar with how the laws are going to change. Yeah. And you see arguments from the right saying, you don't, you're being the puppets for the liberals,
right,
and you don't even know what you're protesting. But they do, because at the center of protest, the whole concept is, this is not right.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. The puppy goes into the overhead bin, and there's a bill on the Senate floor 24 hours after that happened. People begin getting capped off in Vegas and Florida, all over the, and it's just very ridiculous that an administrator of a school would not see this as an opportunity to use it as a form of educating everybody. These young people, man, I'm telling you.
Young people know.
They know.
They know. Just because they don't, they might not. And in many instances, they can articulate the laws surrounding particular legislation or issues. But just because they're not in the suits going down to either Springfield or the Capitol does not mean that they don't know the impact of these things on their lives. And more importantly, it's the fact that they're unwilling to play along with the status quo where they see nothing has been done. They don't have to, it's not rocket science to know that the people who've been representing their interests have not been effective. And so they're taking another route. And I think that idea is scary to those who would rather the gridlock and the inaction continue.
And
I was just going to say, you know, these 16 and 17 year old kids aren't going to be 16 and 17 forever. They're going to vote. They are activated now. If they didn't have any interest in it before, I think the events of the last few years have gotten them to go, okay, so this is a process
but
I have to
but
be
the
in.
Question I have to that, and we can talk about that all night, is yes, they are ready to vote. Who are they going to vote
who
for?
Who do they vote for?
Because there's either part. It's not like there's one party that is welcoming them in.
Right.
We've seen them maybe flock to the Democrat side and be let down over the years. So there's still a question about who are the candidates.
Maybe one of those kids, though.
Yeah, maybe.
Could be one of those guys. I just think that people underestimate the youth, and they always have, and they always will. And you underestimate these young people around this country, man. They are ready to go.
It was impressive. Amara Enya and Mario Smith in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Let's start with the winners and losers. We'll go winners, then losers. It's just in that category. In that order.
In that order.
In that order.
That's what they say on the South Side. In that order.
In that order.
And the West Side, too.
On the Download 720. Stay with us. I just saw Black Panther this weekend. This first, I finally got to see you guys.
Really?
Wakanda forever.
Yeah.
It's good. I liked it. It was good. Hype did not destroy it. I thought that was going to happen. I really did. I was like,
after 3 weeks and $1 billion.
There will be no challenge today.
Actually, today is the 1 month. Today marks 1 month that it's been out.
Really?
It still has
a chance. I think this week it's got some. I forgot what movie's coming out this
week. Doesn't
matter. Right now it has been number one since.
Black Panther ain't leaving the theater till Christmas, buddy. You can hang it up. Every week I'm going. Once a week.
Well, it's going to make the I have this on my winner category too. The Marvel universe, the Infinity War movie, which is coming out. The trailer came out today.
Yeah,
it's going to make it triple because they learned somewhere. I'm assuming in the last month that the star is going to be Black Panther.
Yep.
Yes.
Even if Black Panther's only in it for like a cameo,
6 seconds,
you're in the promo.
It's going to be like it's going to be like when Batman was on in China. It was called the Kato Show.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. The Green Hornet, when it was on in China, was called the Kato Show because of Bruce Lee. Black Panther forever. They knocked it out the park.
Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news, winners and losers. Why don't we start with the Democrats in Pennsylvania get the win? This was a 20-point swing. Whether or not, even if it was too close to call and they did a recall and the Republicans squeaked it out, the Democrats weren't supposed, I mean, just 2 years ago, weren't even close. So everyone loves the think pieces about this is going to tell what's going to happen, or the preview of what's going to happen in November. Is it?
I really don't know. I actually think that the Democratic Party would be foolhardy to use this as a bellwether for what's to come, especially in the midterms. The fact that it was close, I just don't see this as voting as being the panacea that I think they would like for it to be.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of inner turmoil within the party to determine what their message is, what their approach is, their leadership. So this is it's good, but I don't think it's wise for them to use this as a sort of, this is the future, this is the momentum that we'll be able to ride through the midterms.
Yeah, and I would say this too. You see in the state of Illinois, even with the primary, Democrat ads and mailers against Democrats in the way that the Madigan establishment is really going after progressives.
Yep.
And that is, I mean, here we go again with this Clinton-Bernie Sanders divide in this party. So, yeah, there may be a win in Pennsylvania, but I'm not sure what it means for the Democrats in November.
I think the only way we'll be able to judge that is wait until November. You really don't know. It's hard to say. I think I do think they're sweating, though, the Republicans, a little bit. I think Paul Ryan's definitely sweating.
Yeah.
I think that will be the test. If he's gone, it's over with for them.
Is he having a close race, or is that just wishful thinking for Democrats that they could go after the House Speaker's district in Wisconsin?
He's not really supported by Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He's not really supported by him. And I guess you would, as weird as this sounds coming out of my mouth, you would need his support in Wisconsin to kind of sell it. You know what I mean? And I don't know
if they also rally around that particular race, I think they could have a major impact in getting rid of Speaker Ryan.
But we also have to keep in mind that every time, whatever party the president is part of, in a midterm election, the opposite party always ends up garnering a lot of votes and support. So there probably will be a Democratic shift, But some of those Democrats are now being called Trump Democrats because they are like conservative Democrats. Yeah, whatever, man. You know what? I really.
If you believe the ads.
If you, yeah. All of it is it's ridiculous, rather redundant.
Like the ads that are on, I have in the loser category just about the political ads this season have been just
horrible.
Brutal.
Oh, horrible.
Brutal. But this idea of a Trump Democrat, you see this where it almost seems to be coming from the Democratic Party in the state of Illinois. Anyone who challenges it, they find ways to say they. I think a Scott Drury's ad, who is fourth or fifth in the on the, but he's the enemy of Madigan in the AG race. But he's taken the same money from Trump, and they just show Trump. And I'm like, how is Scott Drury and Donald Trump in the same? It's the same with Jeannie Ives and Bruce Rauner.
And even the Lipinski Newman race.
Yeah. Oh man,
and he's got Obama. It's just crazy. Right. It's crazy.
And he got the same guy too to do the voice. Listen, don't vote for him.
He's making good money. Though.
Oh, he's getting paid.
He's the winner out of all of this.
We're gonna find out that it's just a voice modulator from Mike Madigan.
Right.
It's gonna be Mike Madigan going in a world. Right. Before we move on to losers, the winners, the Loyola Ramblers, the Loyola Chicago, a great story. One that, I mean, even as the tournament started, we're like, oh, that's feel good. That's good. Mm-hmm. But they not only had the upset win, but at the buzzer, the SportsCenter top story for the Loyola Ramblers since Rogers Park.
Ramblers are good, man. They have a good basketball team. Everybody on their team has won a championship of some sort in high school. They're good. They're not.
I hadn't been following them. I had not been following until the tournament, and I was actually shocked. But yeah, they're now on the radar.
Shout out to Dante Ingram.
Well, Dante Ingram, a kid from Simeon High School, and that's what I really like about this story. I think the Chicagoans are gravitating not just for Chicago school to be there, but for the kid who hit the big shot to be a public league school kid. And you know, there's so much about Chicago trying to retain its talent.
Yes,
and to have this kid shoot and make it, it's a warm feeling for all Chicagoans.
Yeah, this is they're going to beat Tennessee.
You think so?
I know so.
I did hear Kenny Smith on the broadcast say, they're men.
Yep. They're grown men. It's going to be tough, but I believe
I was like, oh,
they get two games out of this tournament.
All right.
We'll find out tomorrow, right? Oh, I can't wait.
All right, coming up, let's just make a transition right to losers. I have on the list J.B. Pritzker, the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah.
Right before. I mean, there can be something said about the Tribune has been a thorn in J.B. Pritzker's side in the way that they come up at the worst timed investigative stories about J.B. Pritzker.
I'm just smiling.
Love
but
it.
About his offshore dealings, which is not that surprising, but what it shows, again, is an out-of-touch. They're trying to portray an out-of-touch millionaire, billionaire, who is hiding money and moving in the Cayman Islands type of offshore mess that we're familiar with the people that are in power now.
Yes. I mean, Pritzker has been trying to... So, first of all, it's interesting that he's disappeared from the press now. So, he's nowhere to be found after the debate. He has tried to he's almost tried to hide the fact that he is a billionaire, that he has done things that many billionaires do, and has this, to me, a disingenuous veneer of being for everyone and being able to understand everyone. When you do have these tax shelters, like you do that, own it. You have spent $63 million. In this gubernatorial primary.
Of your own
you have
money.
To own, of your own money. You have to own that. And people have a right to ask those questions. And I think the Tribune has done an excellent job of looking both into his dealings, but also into the property tax issues and really calling attention to those issues. And he has done a poor job of responding to any of it.
Well, in the debate at TTW, he's up there not really going in on Joe Barrios, where everybody else wants to go in on that property tax. And once again, finding himself in a situation that he just doesn't seem to be on the right side of where momentum's at. That being said, Mario.
Yes,
anyone can beat him? I mean, or is it his to lose at this point?
We had I had
only
a panel
4 days away.
Had a panel discussion on my show yesterday about this, about him in particular. You know, I don't know if anybody is going to beat him, in spite of the fact that he, first of all, the world better be glad Mario's not a billionaire, because I tell you all my business, where my money was and what I was doing with it. Wouldn't even care.
He wouldn't even care
at all. In a robe with an ascot on, I'd do it every day.
I'd like to see that look.
Oh, I'm working on it. I think he's going to win. I don't think it's going to be as big a victory as maybe he thinks he's going to have. I think the real question is, though, out of any of these candidates, can any of them beat Bruce Rauner? And I wouldn't have said that a year ago, but you think about all the stuff that Bruce Rauner in the last 3 years has been a part of or has done or not done, and then you've got Biss or Kennedy or I almost called him Blagojevich, or J.B. Pritzker. And I mean, Pritzker probably will win.
But some of the things that have come out, so the FBI tapes that came out.
No, Jesus.
That's just the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. We'll be naive to think
that they put
everything out there in the primary. And so the question really is, can Pritzker beat Rohner? And I don't think so.
I don't think
so. Okay, here's what we'll do. Let's take a break. We'll get a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back and stay on that topic as the elections are coming up here on Tuesday. We'll go through some of the other races. Of course, we mentioned the attorney general, but we also mentioned Joe Berrios and the assessor's race. A lot to talk about when it comes to the races. So we'll stay on that coming up after the news here. It's a download or reload in this week's news. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It's a download, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. Mario Smith and Amara Enya in studio. We're reloading this week's news. 630 says a lot of kids. We're just using the walkout as a way to ditch school. Didn't actually care about the gun laws, like the mob of kids that vandalized a Walmart across the street from their school. I know that story because I have a feeling that that's showing up possibly in certain media circles.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten three texts tonight about what about the vandalizing the store.
Yeah.
Again, hundreds of thousands of kids walked out.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about one situation. I will go on record. And I'll say, don't vandalize the Walmart.
Yeah, I mean, and that's it.
Terrible.
I mean, thousands, tens of thousands of kids across the country walk out, and that's the one thing that they want to highlight.
But of course, they're going to highlight that.
Things.
Oh, always. Yeah. Of course, yeah. They walk right to Walmart.
You know, I saw this as well.
Has anybody ever actually been in a Walmart?
Yeah.
You've seen what goes on in that place? They might have been doing them a favor.
I also say on the other side, too, that I saw a video that was taken of a kid at, I think it was at Kenwood, who was arrested.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And that went through like wildfire through Twitter, viral, and everyone saw it. And you don't really know why, but then it was all about the police, and they're not letting African-American kids protest in the same way. But I don't know. I don't know what happened, why that kid was arrested. I mean, there's so much about we only are you know, seeing what we want to see,
if
that's the way it is.
And you know, there's always there's balance, right? So you got the kids walking out, but if you're a reporter of any kind of standing, you're going to be like, there's got to be more to it. Somebody's not walking out of someplace. Right. And then you find out about the Walmart thing and you run with it.
Right. If you were in support of the kids walking out, then you were in support of. If you weren't, then you were looking for any reason to discredit or delegitimize the walkout.
I still say, down with the kids. Wu-Tang is for the children.
Yes. Yes.
312-981-7200. We're continuing here with the losers. Let's go back to election. We go back and forth. I was surprised this election season how much media there was about the misleading ads. And you saw this with Bruce Rauner's ad about Jeannie Ives, about Mike Madigan, which Madigan and Ives are somehow in bed together.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, and then you've seen it with the Joe Berrios ad about Fritz Kagi, about the NRA. But I've seen a lot of press, meaning people fact-checking or saying that that's not right or people stepping up and editorials. It seems that this is more than usual in the fact that there are egregious examples of just flat-out lying and hoping that the electorate is ignorant.
Well, the electorate doesn't do its research anyway. So it's just like where I work, we have to make these ticket bills, and we have a thing about a coat check. No one ever reads it. And I'm like, people don't study. You should really take this seriously. You should know everything intimately about these candidates because they are controlling the whole plane for 4 years. Just like not knowing enough about judges, a judge can change your life. Literally in 10 seconds. And you're like, you don't know any position of any of these folks. So now it's not a surprise that they're using blatant lies because nobody's going to fact check them.
Do you think it'll change at all? Or, I mean, is this just data says that you can manipulate the electorate by doing this kind of stuff?
I hope that it changes. I mean, the amount of stretching in this election cycle has just gone beyond the pale. I mean, somehow the assessor is connected to the NRA and he's fighting gun violence. It's bizarre. And I think it's ridiculous and really speaks more to the fact that a lot of these candidates don't have anything defensible to say about themselves. So they have to concoct these bizarre
ramblings,
manipulations of facts to smear their opponent. So I hope that this is dialed back.
And to what end does that serve you if you're lying? And then you win. So now if I'm me or you, we're like, that dude's a blatant liar.
Well, obviously, You say that, but the president of the United States right now seems to use that as a strategy. I'm not one way or the other. That has been proven fact that he does not necessarily tell the truth when and does not feel any remorse for doing so.
Through these headphones when you mentioned his name.
I just said the president of the United States. All right, so but moving on, let's talk about this because the assessor's office, that has become a crazy race for the Cook County assessor. The incumbent Joe Berrios, who has been in the loser category a couple weeks in a row here because he has just been really attacked by investigative reports, stories. I mean, really just about favoritism that he gives downtown buildings. Yep. And now a new study that says because of that favoritism, millions of dollars have been put on the back.
$2.2 billion
put on the backs of the rest of Chicago. Yes. So for me and my tax bill, when I think about how much it went up, a lot of that had to do is because the people who own whatever skyscraper went down.
Yes.
Not a good storyline 4 days before your reelection.
Yeah, date. Yeah. But this is the information that the public needs to know. I mean, quite frankly, I wish this had come out earlier, but the fact that it's coming out now, I think, is as good a time as any to really shine a light on what's been happening for years, not just under this assessor, but under his predecessor as well. And if this is what it takes for them to actually change the formula, change the whole process, and if that means he loses his job, then so be it. But he's been allowed to ride this gravy train, he and the others who've been involved in this whole scheme for far too long. And as you said, it's cost us $2.2 billion that we're shouldering, as opposed to the large real estate holders who should have been bearing more of that burden.
Yeah.
I agree with everything Amara just said. And I will add that I believe on Wednesday morning we'll be talking about him as former Cook County tax assessor. So. I'm almost sure.
Well,
almost.
It's going to be interesting because I think more than anything, it's a referendum on the Chicago machine.
It really is.
It really is.
And that then and the assessor plays in that very well. So we'll see how that kind of plays out on Tuesday. Yep. All right. Let's get to the overreported and the underreported stories. I had on the overreported the revolving door of Trump cabinet. It's a huge story. It's definitely, but this idea that Rex Tillerson's out, which is no surprise. I've been talking about that for 8 months now.
Yeah.
But then right away, the media knows, I don't know if they get the readout of the people who are clicking websites, and they're like, ooh, people like this story. Let's start speculating about who's next and who's next. Sources say this guy's next and that guy's next. And at a certain point, I feel like it's overreported because, as we just saw with the Tillerson story, it was almost an entire year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but you know, he's not getting impeached anytime soon, so this is his act. You're fired. That's his signature phrase.
Now I'll play devil's advocate.
Hey,
you like when I do that?
Yes,
right?
I do.
I also believe that the president has the prerogative to do so. If his whole thing, and I'm not necessarily endorsing it, but if his whole thing is I want to drain the swamp. And I want people to do things my way, and I'm going to apply my way to the federal government. When he first comes into office, he picks a lot of guys who are pretty standard, and there might be a national security advisor with experience or a secretary of state, whatever it might be. And over time, he's realizing, you don't fit the bill. You are too much of the status quo. You are getting in the way of the radical changes that I want to do. You're fired. And I guess that's what if you're a Trump supporter, that's what you want. You want people to get out of the way so the president can do his job.
But is it more of him wanting people that always say yes and never saying no?
That's the question.
Of course it is. This is about him wanting yes men to surround him. And yes, he does have the prerogative to determine who his staff will be. I mean, anyone in leadership should have some measure of control over who they have to work with. However, there's something to be said about the instability in the White House because of that revolving door. How can you move any kind of policy and how can you do anything consistently when next week you don't know if you're going to be in or out? Mm-hmm. And what message does that send to your existing staff who will now feel that at any moment they're going to get you're fired?
Right.
Right.
I got a lot going on. I don't have time for all this. Stormy's all in my business. You're fired.
I have Stormy as well as the Mario. That's your overreported.
Yes. Yeah, Stormy Daniels, man. Who knew that the linchpin to take down the Trump administration would be a pornographic movie actress?
Well, you know what? It felt like that has been a story doing this reload segment every Friday. That was at the biggest. Then it was winners and losers. Then it was rabbit hole. And now it's in the overreported because it just feels like now all the lawyers, everybody involved, the media, they want to continue to keep this in our right in front of us, even even though there is no extra or new news.
And tonight, Trump's lawyer is saying that the NDA that she signed, that she didn't fulfill the agreement, so they're trying to get $20 million out of her. I say show the 60 Minutes interview this Sunday, and let's see what's up. Because what is Trump going to say? I did not ever look at her. Yeah, you did. You're all up on her. You did. You absolutely did.
Well, I think it was Eric Zorn who had a great column about that, just saying what the president should say. He just come out and say, I didn't think you can handle it, but I was wrong. You can.
She was a bit aggressive. I had to back up.
Yeah, and I did it. I didn't. I'm sorry that I didn't say I did it earlier.
He should have just said, man, you know, man, again, own it.
Yeah,
you did it. You cheated on your wife on it.
Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio tonight. Okay, so we will do underreported coming up. And then we got underreported, we got rabbit hole, and then we've got which story we remembered coming up here on the download to reload the news. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. Mario says hi, of course. As always.
Hey, buddy.
I'm a big fan.
I'm a bigger fan.
Rob Martier, dude. It's that dude.
Let the mutual love fest meeting continue.
Every time I'm here, bro. Every time I'm here.
Mario Smith and Amara Enya in studio. Underreported. Let's go right to Amara's underreported. This is a story I didn't know much about at all, about an activist who died in Brazil. Talk about this.
Yeah, so Mario Franco was a dynamic activist woman from the favelas in Brazil, spoke out on every issue that affected disenfranchised and marginalized people, particularly around police brutality and the killings that were happening of people from where she came from. She got elected to city council in Brazil, was 18 months into her term. She's 38 years old, 18 months into her term. She is gunned down by assassinated, essentially, in my opinion, shot 4 times in the head, 9 times overall. Her driver was also killed. And this has sparked protests across Brazil. She spoke up for women's rights, particularly around black women. This is a huge, huge loss, but more telling. It speaks to me about what happens for those who are willing to speak truth to power.
Yeah, right.
And that there's so much sacrifice involved when you choose to challenge particularly oppressive systems. And
I would also say it's underreported, meaning it's not a story that is hitting the front pages of our country.
She was actually talking about police brutality. I guess the new president in Brazil is trying to has given the police sweeping powers where they can really just do whatever the hell they want to do. And unfortunately, her voice got shut off because she was speaking up against something that she fully believed in and the people in the country believed in as well. And as black people in Brazil, they got it rough. It's really rough. It's almost as rough as it is for black people in America, I suppose. Yeah. But Ashe, that hurt this morning to read that. That was tough.
Some other stories this week. Of course, the head of the person who the president wants to nominate to be the head of the CIA fell under controversy for possible a history of waterboarding and war crimes. And there was a lot of pushback saying, I'm not going to, people coming out, I think even lawmakers coming out, I'm not going to vote for this person. And it came out that the story that everybody was referring to, even later, was wrong. Like they said that she was in Thailand at the time, and she had oversaw this the waterboarding of a terrorist suspect, and she wasn't. And they corrected the story, but nobody's corrected the analysis or the reaction to that story, you know, like that. And so now I think it's an interesting way we live now where you can say something, whatever you want to say. And if you're wrong, well, you're wrong, but it still stays with that person.
That sort of goes along with a 24-hour news cycle. Like now it's not the fact checking and the verifying is not happening. It's just we put whatever we can out there and then we'll try to clean it up after the fact if it turns out that it's wrong. And this is one of those instances where they didn't do any of the cleanup.
She was at that casino that Black Panther and Adora Milaje were at.
Oh, wow.
She's doing
269
some work.
Says, here's another. This is right to your example night. About the 24-hour news cycle. Underreported. Trump's going to get his ego parade.
Oh,
that's what he says. At the estimated cost of $30 million, and then they go into the stat about if the money was divided about the VAs. But that was a story that was right at the beginning of this week. And because of the 24-hour cycle, it just disappears.
Yep.
So I don't know if it was underreported because it was really reported on that day. But maybe when
that
you get
like
to
Monday,
Friday.
Right?
Yeah, you get to Friday. Yeah. You're like, yes, I guess it is based on everything else.
It's kind of like when I watch CNN. I forget that CNN used to actually do 24-hour news reports, right?
Now it's
everybody has a show.
Yeah.
You say two words on CNN, you get a show the next week. So it's kind of like,
You want to know what else was this week? Which is crazy, didn't make our list. At the beginning of the week on Monday was the U.S. House Intelligence Committee saying that they're wrapping up the investigation of Russia. The Republicans and the Democrats came out the next day. That was Monday.
But that's a perfect example of the 24-hour
news
cycle.
Isn't that crazy to think about?
That was Monday. It's just right.
All right, let's talk about our rabbit hole stories. Dennis Rodkin and the crew at Crane Chicago Business had a big story I read today about underwater mortgages. And something that you think about back at the recession 2009-2010, that Chicago leads the nation. And houses being under or mortgages being underwater, it has not responded like many other places around the country have. There's factors in why that is, this, there, and that. But something that I feel is it also falls into the underreported category, but also rabbit hole story in the sense that if you listen to the federal government or even the state government, we're past all that. Regulations be damned.
Right.
Get rid of all these financial industry regulations. They're hurting the economy. Everyone's rich again. And you see a story like that where you see that a lot of Chicagoans are still struggling on top of the fact that you see the investigation in the Tribune about the assessor's office.
Yes.
It really does paint this picture that, no, we're not past what happened just a mere 10 years ago.
Yes. I think it dovetails very well with what's happening with the property tax system here. And it is underreported because if you listen to them tell it, we've moved past the recession. Unemployment is at record lows. Folks are moving into the city, whatever the narrative is. But the reality is that many people are underwater. And then when you couple that with what I call the property tax scam, then you understand why so many people are underwater in their mortgages.
Yeah.
Jabs.
Your rabbit hole in the same area is segregation increasing in suburbs, according to a report.
Yes. So this was a study that came out, I believe, out of the University of Chicago, where it's showing that segregation is increasing in the suburbs, whereas previously it was understood that it would decrease. As people moved out of the city, they were moving to more diverse communities and they wanted to be in more diverse communities. But what they're finding is that suburbs are becoming increasingly segregated. People are choosing whether they can choose or whether they're just unable to move into certain areas. That segregation is increasing there.
I used to live in Harvey. There it is.
That's it. There you go.
The last white person to live in Harvey was Lou Boudreau. 700 years ago. There you go. Shout out to Harvey, the magic city.
Yep. You know, last person in Harvey. Mm-hmm. The last white person there. That's hilarious.
Thank you. I'm working on it.
Yours is ticket prices for... What is this? What is OTR2?
On the run, Beyonce and Jay-Z. Let me explain something to you, Justin Kaufman.
Like, off track what?
Let me explain something to you and your listeners. Ain't no way in hell that I'm paying that kind of money.
So this is Jay-Z and Beyonce coming on tour. What are the
second
ticket
tour
prices?
On SeatGeek to sit on the floor of Soldier Field, which I wouldn't do. It's $1,300 for one ticket.
Wow.
Let me tell you something. What will have to happen for $1,300? Jay-Z's coming to my crib. We're gonna eat lunch together, and then he's gonna drive me to the show.
He's gonna
make sure I get my
week.
Seat right. And do it at Soldier Field for 3 months. Yeah. Every Friday, I get to go see him and his wife.
That's crazy, man.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. And if you've got that kind of money, first of all, I know people that are going, and I know you broke. If you got that kind of money, you a sucker. Ain't no way in the world. Spotify.
And they're going to do that tour 30 more times
exactly.
in their lifetime.
Well, you know. And then if he comes out with another great album, he's going to come right back.
Yeah.
And I guess it says more about where we are as a country when your entertainers can command that kind of dollar and you bite. You're like, I'm buying. I'm going to see it. Man, please. All right. I got YouTube.
I got YouTube
on my TV. I got screen mirroring.
All right, real quick, as we go to the last the last one of the night, which story will be remembered in history from this week? What do you got, Amar? What do you think the story is going to be?
So I think I said something about Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His passing. He was such a giant in the sciences and physics and metaphysics and everything. And so I think that was kind of underreported or got lost in the shuffle too.
But that's a good one too. That will be remembered. That's a good thing to
remember. Stephen Hawking was the dude.
Yeah. What do you think, Mario?
Stephen Hawking. I think that'll be it. Well, you know, because again, this 24-hour news cycle, it'll probably be Stormy Daniels.
Oh,
that's what people will remember for the next 5,000 years.
Stormy over Steven?
Yeah.
It shouldn't be.
And I'll say this is the week that people will look back and see that the Chicago Bears win the Super Bowl.
Slow down,
the
friend.
Five or six free agent acquisitions.
Let's not be so quick about that.
14-2.
Let's see a football in the air first.
Yeah. Why? Why would that ever change? Why would we not?
Because, you know, the Bears. I can wait. Go Sox. Congratulations, WGN, for having the White
Sox.
There
you go.
I love you now again.
There you go.
Although I did not love you.
Yeah, right. Mario Smith, Amara Enya, reloading this week's news. You guys, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate
Thank you, Justin.
It.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, this Saturday, Murder and Mayhem in Chicago returns. I'm talking about the annual Crime Fiction Conference that takes place at Roosevelt University. The conference celebrates the thriller, the mystery, the crime novel. It's designed for fans and writers alike with sessions like True Tales from a Life in Mystery or True Tales from a Career in Crime or even a session on how to get published. Of course, Chicago is the perfect city to host this event, considered to be the capital of crime fiction, both because of its long-sorted history with crime and violence, but also because of the writers that come from here. Dana Kay is one of the co-founders of Crime and Mayhem in Chicago. She's a writer and publicist in town, and she's here in studio. Dana, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And if you go to the conference, make sure you stay for the keynote. The writers in conversation will be writer Jeffrey Deaver and Gillian Flynn. Flynn is a Chicago writer who's arguably one of this town's most successful. Her breakout hit, Gone Girl, was made into a major motion picture, which she wrote the screenplay for. And her first book, Sharp Objects, is being made into an HBO series coming out this summer starring Amy Adams. Gillian Flynn is also working on a new book, which will be her first novel since Gone Girl. And she is in studio as well. Gillian, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
All right, so let's go right to Murder and Mayhem in Chicago. It's the second year for this. And as I said, this is the perfect city. I mean, when you really think about it, it's no coincidence that it's Murder and Mayhem in Chicago. You put Chicago in the title of this conference. Why do you do that?
Well, one of the big things that always surprised me is Chicago, at least in New York publishing, was viewed as a flyover city. We weren't getting a lot of authors touring and coming here, but we had so much fresh talent. There are so many talented crime writers that live here, so we had such a great literary community right here. And I wanted to make sure that it was celebrated and that we could really put Chicago on the map as being a hub of not only literary talent, but also a vibrant city of readers.
Yeah.
And I think that this conference helps exemplify
that. It is amazing how many writers, national writers, Sarah Paretsky, even legal thriller Scott Turow, but there are so many other writers who even been on this program that are in this genre that come from Chicago. Why do you think that is? What is it about Chicago? What's in the water here that makes people, and Gillian, I'll let you in on this, I mean, that really gets people writing in this genre?
I just think it's a city that ignites your imagination. I think you can walk out your front door, you can see a million things. I mean, that's what I do pretty much every day when it's not too cold is I, you know, middle of the day, I go for a walk and I wander, you know, all over the place. And I see just amazing people and experiences and food and you know, dining and wine and dine and the buildings and, you know, the angle of the sky even. I mean, I just think I never get tired of looking at this city and being in this city, and it's vibrant and exciting and gritty and weird.
Yeah.
And I just love it. I think it really is. I think to me, it's the number one city for mystery, crime, living.
Well, I forgot where I read this today, but just the idea that it's a city of shadows, and that there's this idea. If even you look at some of the older writers and Man with a Golden Arm and other places where Chicago plays this role as it's not just the city in which something takes place, but there's a reason it's here. It's like you said, gritty, but it's also mysterious, and it's very it's very dark.
Mm-hmm. And I think that Chicago is a really, like, a small town as a big city. And I think that we're really collaborative and the literary community is very supportive. It's not very cutthroat and competitive. We really believe that there's room enough for everybody. And when you go to book signings or author events, there's lots of other authors there buying each other's books, supporting each other. And I think that that breeds a lot of talent when everyone helps each other out to sell more books and reach more readers.
Right. What I mean, when writers come to this conference, what is this essentially a big networking event for them? I mean, when if you're a writer and you're in the thriller category or crime fiction category, is that what this is? Almost your conference?
Absolutely. So in addition to the speakers, there's lots of authors or aspiring writers that come to attend and listen to the writers speak. But there's breaks in between each session, and there's lots of opportunities for networking, for getting books signed, for asking questions. I find that writers love to talk about writing and love to talk about their process. And so anyone who's an aspiring writer or even a published author who wants to take their career to the next level can have that opportunity to meet the authors, ask questions, and collaborate.
And I would assume a lot of people coming to talk to you about your process, Gillian. I mean, obviously having such success with the work that you've done. And I today reading a lot of the work about your career, everybody wants to talk to you about how you write with the characters, your approach. I mean, they really dig deep, especially when you get such mega hits like Gone Girl. Do you get sick of that? I mean, as a writer where, I mean, there just seems to be so much attention into every single small piece of minutia that goes into the books that you read or write.
No, I mean, I think it's a blast. I always say if a writer is ever, you know, offended or prickly about someone, A, wanting their book signed by them, B, having questions about, you know, characters or parts of their book, you know, you should stop writing because you're kind of a jerk at that point. You know what I mean? That's what every writer dreams of is having people want to ask them questions about their work. So, you know, I love when people stump me with questions. I love when people have thought enough about my characters that they've, you know, created a different backstory for them than I've thought about, or, you know, they have these really interesting different questions. And I love, you know, and I love talking even to people who don't like my books. I mean, you know, a lot of people will come up to me with Gone Girl and say, oh, you know, I hated Gone Girl. I hated the ending, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm always, you know, okay, well, tell me, you know, what do you hate about it? What, you know, how do you want it to end? And you know, I love having that dialogue. I would rather someone feel vehemently about my book than sort of say, well, that was a good book and never think about it again. Right. So I love that dialogue. I think writers treasure that dialogue, you know, in part because you spend so much of your time alone every day. So, you know, you want to get out there and talk to people. So I'm really looking forward to it. If you see me Saturday just running around like a crazy person, grabbing people and talking to them, that's why. I'm just excited to be out amongst society.
Well, let's take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to talk about that, the contrast in your career, because you do have a career in which you are a solo and an isolated writer in the fact that you're writing novels. But you also, which a lot of people don't get the opportunity to, write screenplays based on Gone Girl. I mean, that's amazing that the writer was you were given that opportunity. And that's much more collaborative with the director and producer and other people that are involved. So we'll talk more about that collaboration. Gillian Flynn in studio, as well as Dana Kay. Murder and Mayhem in Chicago is at the Roosevelt, at Roosevelt University, coming up here tomorrow here in Chicago, the second year for the conference, the Crime Fiction Conference. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and continue the conversation. Stay with us.
It's a Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Murder and Mayhem in Chicago. The Crime Fiction Conference will be at the Roosevelt University tomorrow. MurderMayhemChicago.com is the website. You can get tickets at the door. In studio, Dana Kay, who's one of the co-founders of the festival, and Gillian Flynn, the author of such books as Gone Girl and Sharp Objects. Sharp Objects is coming out this summer on HBO from the same people who brought you Big Little Lies. I mean, what a tremendous timing for that to come out, starring Amy Adams. You have to be excited about that project.
I am so excited. It was my first book and the last one to reach the screen, and I packed up the family and we moved out to LA two summers ago so I could write for it and produce it and everything. So I really got deeply involved in it, and I'm super proud of it.
You have you really do have dual professions at this point. You have you're a novelist, of course, and that has brought you so much success, but really as much success from the work that you've done in Hollywood, whether it be writing screenplays or, like you said, working and writing scripts for Sharp Objects. Talk about that. Talk about the difference, or because a lot of times novelists will get their books optioned, and we have a lot of people who come in here and will talk about that, but they are not, that's the end of their experience. They get a check and they're done. Mm-hmm. For you to be the screenwriter on Gone Girl, to be the writer of episodes for Sharp Objects, what's that mean to you to have that experience?
You know, it means a lot to me personally because I grew up, my dad was a film professor, so that's what we did growing up, as our father-daughter dates once a week, as he'd take me to the movies and we'd talk about it and discuss it and critique them. And so I grew up just loving movies. I mean, you know, as much as I love books, I also love movies. And so to be able to toggle back and forth between them and do them both is like, it's very thrilling for me. And so I really, I like them both. I like it's fun to come out come out of my little lair and be able to do the collaborative part and work with other writers. Right. You know, with the TV series was a whole different type of experience. With Gone Girl, I was the only writer. On a TV series, you're kind of in a writer's room, and that was its own kind of unique experience to hear these other writers bring their voices. So
I was
going
to say, is it hard for you to let go of your characters in that regard? Because other writers get to write now the characters on Sharp Objects. I mean, is it difficult to let go like that?
You know, it would have been if it weren't a group that were very loyal to the book. You know, it was a group of writers who really liked the book and wanted the book to be safe and securely moved to the, or transferred to the screen. So I was lucky in that way, and I really liked a lot of the writers. In fact, several of the writers I knew way back from the days I wrote for Entertainment Weekly magazine was right. One of my best friends that I hired, who writes for TV now too. So I was surrounded by good people.
The learning curve to move from novelist to screenwriter. Talk about that. I mean, was that difficult to jump in and say, I can write the screenplay? I mean, because that's an entirely different beast. They're not similar in the way that you have to deal with stage directions and character development in a much different way.
It's incredibly different. It's incredibly different. I've always felt, though, that I write my books almost filmically. I think in terms of I'm going to write this scene today as opposed to I'm going to write this amount of pages or this number of words or anything like that. I pay a lot of attention to the dialogue is really important to me. So, I grew up kind of saturated in film, and I do think I've always brought that to my my books. So it wasn't as crazy for me. Like I said, I wrote for Entertainment Weekly, so right. I wrote about film.
So
I studied
it, yeah.
film, so I spent a lot of my life thinking about film. So it was crazy, but not completely crazy when I did it.
Do you have to approach the projects is that they're different? They may be the same characters, but they're different entirely. Meaning, so many times it's about adapting the book to screenplay, and you might have different plot points and different acts, if you will, and yeah. Do you have to think about them as maybe they're the same characters, but they're different stories?
Absolutely. What I've done with both Gone Girl and Sharp Objects, and a couple other adaptations I have of other people's work that I'm working on, is to look at the source material once again. Take some notes and don't go back, because then it does really have to become its own sort of thing. So that and it really does, you kind of have to allow characters to switch a little bit. I mean, working with David Fincher, like I just found working with him, Gone Girl, he was okay with me making it a little bit more funny than the book was. Like, there were some of the lines became a little bit more funny. We were able to like take advantage of the strangeness of the situation that Nick and Amy found themselves in, and to take advantage of that. So, you know, you find certain things come to life a little bit more, and you have to allow that, or why bother doing it to me? Why bother doing it?
You have so many projects coming up here. You've got Sharp Objects, which will be on HBO this summer, Amy Adams. You've got a new novel, which is in the works, and you also have Widows, which is the project, another television or project you did with Steve McQueen, which is a huge thing. Talk about that.
Yeah, so Steve McQueen, who directed 12 Years a Slave, got in touch and said, "Do you want to do a heist film set in Chicago?" And I was like, starring four women. So it's based loosely on a TV series that was hugely popular when he was growing up in England in the 80s. And it's about four women who come together, they're widows, they're going to pull off the heist that their husbands couldn't. And it goes from there, but we've transferred it to Chicago in current day. And Viola Davis is the lead widow. And it's just been a tremendous, new opportunity doing it. It's been so much fun. And I'm so proud that we filmed it in Chicago. I mean, so many times a movie is, quote, set in Chicago, but you see this Chicago skyline, and then you get down and it's that's Toronto. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right, not Chicago. Right. So we are in Chicago. You'll see, you recognize all the different neighborhoods, the cool, different architecture and places of Chicago. And it feels like it's a dirty little Valentine to Chicago.
My last question, just as you embark on writing your first novel since Gone Girl, and now that you've had so much secondary work off of the novels that you've done before, do you approach this one differently? Are you already thinking about how this is going to play out on different platforms? Does your approach to the work, to the novel, change because of the success you've had with the secondary projects off the first three?
you know, I feel like everything's a little bit louder. I have to brush away the Greek chorus behind me that's, you know, is it too much like Gone Girl? Is it not enough like Gone Girl? And try to get some sort of quiet about those sort of doubts. I absolutely never allow myself to think like, oh, can this be a movie? Can this be a TV series? Because that is how you make a really bad book. That's how you write a really bad book. So I'm just writing the book that I want to write. And I'm really enjoying just being back in that world again that I own completely. There's something really joyful about not having to think about budgets or locations or casting, and just I'm just making this world that's all mine. So that's been a joy.
Dana, what are you looking forward to most with Murder and Mayhem in Chicago tomorrow?
I'm really looking forward to hearing Gillian Flynn talk with Jeffrey Deaver. I am a longtime reader of both of them, and they write. They're some of the warmest and most lovely people that I've met, and they write really dark, twisted novels that are really compelling. So I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say. And we also have the True Tales from the Career in Crime panel, which is all experts. We have ex-cops, medical examiners, and people who actually work in the field that a lot of the writers probably want to interview for research for their books. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what they have to say.
As Dana Kay, she's the co-founder of Murder and Mayhem in Chicago, the annual conference, second year, which will be at Roosevelt University tomorrow, murdermayhemchicago.com, or tickets at the door. Gillian Flynn, of course, Chicago writer who has credits include Gone Girl, I don't even think credits is the right word, but I guess it is in your, with your career, Sharp Objects, and a new novel, which is on the way, as well as We'll Look for Widows and other projects that are coming out. Dana, Gillian, thanks so much for being here, and good luck with the conference tomorrow.
Thanks, Thank Justin. You.
All right. Coming up here, the Chicago Accent Challenge. This is going to be a ton of fun. Ted McClellan in the building. We are going to judge. Rob, you missed it.
Oh, this is
the best thing last week. Here's what we did. People call in.
Right.
And they are contestants. The winner gets a pizza. And there's two categories, male and female. And we're judging the best Chicago accent. And the questions we asked last week, which were really scientific, was, welcome to Portillo's, may I take your order? And then answer that one. That's a good one, right? And the other question was, name the starting five for the starting five pitchers, the rotation for the 83 Chicago White Sox.
All right.
And the winner was, I think the Portillo's was great because it was hilarious. Everyone just gave us their order in the Chicago accent. But the winner on the 83 Sox, I forgot his name already, but he will be entered into the big tournament at the end of the year. But he said, Hoyt, Dotson, and the other guys.
Hoyt, Dotson, and the other guys.
And the other guys. Yeah. And I was like, that's the answer. You nailed it. That is the answer I had on paper. I was like, who knows what the other three guys were? It doesn't matter.
Love it.
So that's coming up. So Ted will be here. We got some new questions tonight. Some new things for you to read. 312-981-7200 if you want to show off your accent and try to win a prize. Thanks, Rob. Well, the big story, of course, because it's Friday night, 9 o'clock, it's crazy. The FBI, the Justice Department, I guess it would be Jeff Sessions, by press release, fired high-ranking FBI, I guess you'd call him an executive, Andrew McCabe. Andrew McCabe fired a day before he was set to retire. Now you would say, why is that a big deal? Because if he retires, he gets his pension benefits for 22 years of service to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So Andrew McCabe, who had fallen under the attack of the president for not being more effective, I guess, or not, well, let's just be frank, I mean, prosecuting Hillary Clinton for her emails. And the FBI had said, and I think it was an independent investigator, had said that Andrew McCabe had been wrong in his assessment. So there was grounds for termination, if you will. But as you remember, Andrew McCabe stepped aside and stayed, I think he was using vacation time. I don't know what he was doing to get to the retirement that was going to be the Sunday. So he had already stepped aside, recused himself, what have you, mostly over Russia matters. The president, who had used Andrew McCabe several times in tweets, seems to have pressured the Attorney General Jeff Sessions to fire Andrew McCabe a day before he was supposed to get his retirement and pension benefits as a big, I can't say the expletive, you, to him, his career, and his service to the FBI. I don't know how that's going to play. I obviously that, you know, we are a divided country and there are people that will do whatever, you know, Donald Trump and the president suggests or think this is a good thing. But there's not too many times that when you start messing with people's money, especially someone who didn't break the law, but maybe on the, you know, on the wrong side politically, to have spent that many years as an FBI agent and executive, to be treated that way by the United States government, it's harsh. It's harsh, man. It's not what you expect, especially since at the end of the day, the federal government is run by taxpayers. We're the boss. I know that we elect our officials to represent us in Congress and also in the White House. And I'm not sure if you did a poll that the American taxpayers would be okay with playing games when it comes to retirement and to firing someone a day before just because you had disagreements. Now, I'm sure I'll get texts and calls saying it's more than disagreements. They felt that he didn't do his job, that he was political in his job. But there's no current investigation. I mean, there was, and I apologize for not knowing. I'm just recalling. There was an investigation. I don't know if it was independent or if it was at the FBI that they said that there would be grounds for his termination. Now, why they had that investigation? They had the investigation because somebody asked to do it, whether it be the Attorney General or the President. But because of the way that he had handled the Hillary Clinton email case during the election, they felt that there were grounds for his dismissal. And Donald Trump, in a very vindictive way, waited until the day before he was supposed to get his retirement and pension benefits secured for his retirement to fire him. Whew. That's cold. That's like real estate developer cold. Yikes. I don't know. Twitter is, you know, it's hard for, Twitter's not a good source. It's never a good source because you never know. First of all, most of the stuff is opinion. It's not fake news. It's opinion. People need to get that straight. Most of the time when you're looking at Twitter and someone, you know, saying something, they're taking the facts and putting an angle on it for whatever need they need and on both sides. So that's not a good, but to look right now and to see how Twitter is responding at 9 o'clock, 9:45 Central Time, on a Friday night before St. Patrick's Day during the NCAA tournament. I mean, the old adage is you bury the news on Fridays. You know, this is burying the news. But also, just, I don't know if I like that my president is playing, I don't know, shady games with, you know, I don't know the right word to sum up how I feel about messing with people's lives like that. Especially that it's not because he did wrongdoing, it's because he felt that McCabe has gotten in the way of prosecuting his enemies or possibly paving the way for a special prosecutor to investigate the president. And so it feels very selfish. It's not for the good of the country. He didn't fire Andrew McCabe because the national security was on the line or that he stole state secrets or embezzled money or was involved in a misconduct, sexual misconduct or allegations of harassment. It's purely political. And so you have to ask the question, what kind of country are we that we can start messing with? And I don't want to be naive. I'm sure it happens all the time. But to do it so publicly and do it so flagrantly, is that the right word? To wait until a day before to give them the ultimate. I don't know. I don't like the optics on that. And maybe you can make an argument that he was okay in firing McCabe, but that he should have, and he was a bad FBI agent, and he got in the way of clearly prosecuting a corrupt politician, which would be argued to the day as the day is long. but the point being that I don't know how I feel about the flagrant seems to be the right word. Like just this, I'm going to hurt you personally because this is personal to me.
Yeah, it's the timing. You know, if he wanted to, he's had a lot of time to fire him.
Yeah, 2 months at least.
Yeah, since December, I think. So
he knew all along. Let's wait. Let's just get him on the last day. I'll show this guy. He should have. He should have prosecuted. He should have locked up Hillary. I'll show this guy. Boy, oh boy. And again, just put politics aside. And it's hard to say that seems to be the right way to go. I don't think that whether you're conservative, liberal, or right or left, any form that you would wish that upon your enemies. I feel like you get down in the dirt like that, in the mud. It's a bad reflection on our country and a bad reflection on our politics. Maybe a wake-up call to go, all right, I get it. And, you know, the thing about McCabe, he put out a statement. And he gives an interesting statement that he put out. I got to find it here. I like what he says. He says, this is his response today. After he was fired by press release. A man who was set to retire after 22 years of service as an FBI agent.
I don't think Sessions is on Twitter. That's why.
For the last year and a half, this is the McCabe quote. For the last year and a half, my family and I have been targets of an unrelenting assault on our reputation and my service to this country. Articles too numerous to count have leveled every sort of false, defamatory, and degrading allegation against us. The president's tweets have amplified and exacerbated it all. He called for my firing. He called for me to be stripped of my pension after more than 20 years of service. And all along, we have said nothing, never wanting to distract from the mission of the FBI by addressing the lies told and repeated about us. It's a pretty classy statement. Whew, man. Yeah, Twitter's a buzz. All right, we'll take a quick break here. We'll come back and we'll continue. Coming up, the Chicago Accent Challenge. We'll move past the news of the night, but you know, obviously, we'll continue to monitor it and see how the fallout is, and we'll have it all weekend, and Rob will have it in the newscast, all that kind of stuff. But the Chicago Accent Challenge coming up. Ted McClellan will be in studio. We are essentially judging your Chicago accent. And if you do a good job, if you are the winner, you're going to get a pizza tonight. And you'll be entered into the big citywide tournament where the grand prize total, $333. Stay with us. And Virginia's now down 14 points.
Could we be seeing history in the making?
Is this the first? Would this be the first time that a number one would go down?
Again, I'm going to defer to Pete, but I think so.
Yeah,
this is the first time a 16 would go down, or a one would go down to a 16.
Oh, I feel so bad for my son. So I really got into this this year. I was like, okay, you can do, let's do brackets, but I'm not going to sit there with you and go, I don't know, Duke's good. Duke, you know, Carolina. I'm not even going to be in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You're on your own. And he came up with a Final Four that was St. Bonaventure, Penn, Lipscomb, because he's like, a lip comb? And then he picked Arizona, which I was like, they'll go. And they got upset. And then he obviously is going by the name or he's doing something, but he picked Virginia to win.
And I'm like, if you would have just stuck with your guns and done the weird names like right. UMBC, you would have had this upset.
University of Maryland, Baltimore County, the Retrievers.
Now, it's not over. I mean, obviously, there's still 13 minutes to play, and it is the number one seed, and they could get hot real quick. But, yeah, just I feel bad. That I'm like, I would read him the scores this morning. I'm like, all right, what do you got? He's like, he'd name the game, and I'd be like, that's Michigan. He's like, oh, darn. Like, it was just like X, 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 X. He X'd out all of them. I watched the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure who's announcing this game, but you know that if it's not Jim Nance, he's probably slamming his head up against the desk. Hello, friends.
He's stuck on the New Mexico State Clemson game. He's like, why'd I pick Clemson?
Darn it.
Darn it.
I shouldn't have gone location.
Right. All right. 847 says, I think the word should be petty. President Trump is just being petty. He didn't like McCabe, so President Trump wanted to screw him over, show him what he has, a petty, petty move. 219 says, good riddance. 406 says, I'm a Trump supporter, and I even think this is wrong. Someone else says, McCabe yesterday on her MSNBC show, Nicole Wallace asked her panelist, Trump that much of an expletive? And the panel said, yes, he would do this. And, yeah. And then, of course, 630 says Trump's a class act. And then 219 says you don't know what you're talking about, which is classic. Whenever someone doesn't agree, then you don't know what you're talking about. I would think that I'm representing a lot of Americans right now who are like, what? So explain it to me. Explain it to me, Attorney General Sessions. Explain it to me, President Trump. Why did he get fired the day before his pension? You have the right to fire him. I don't have a problem with that. You can do that if you feel like, again, it was a political firing. You felt like he didn't go politically all the way that he needed to go on Hillary Clinton's emails. But explain it to me. Don't hide on a Friday night. St. Patrick said, you did this. It's personal. It's a personal beef that you have. And you played it out in front of taxpayers. All right. Let's talk about Chicago Accent Challenge. Coming up.
Favorite actor day. Favorite drink on those. Bears. Hawks. Sox. Favorite day, Sunday. Favorite team, the Bears. Favorite store, Ventures. Sayers, Sayers. Favorite show, Danza. Also, the Noles. Weatherman, Skillin. Music, the Bulls. Favorite actor, Denny. Favorite drink, Old Noles. Bears, Hawks, Sox.
Oh, I love it. It's a Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. And it's time for our new segment here on the Download. And this one is definitely a keeper just based on last week. Tonight, we continue our year-long tournament called the Chicago Accent Challenge. The Chicago accent has been made famous by super fans, but there's much more to our local dialect than Bears and Bulls. It's nuanced and according to region, ethnicity, and gender. How do I know this? Well, because I read my guest book tonight, Ted McClellan.
Hi.
He's back. He's the author of How to Speak Midwestern. Ted, good to see you.
Great to be back.
In Rock Island today. We'll talk all about that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200. It's simple. We get contestants on the line, and the best accent wins a Lou Malnati's pizza. But that's not all. The winner gets the opportunity to play in the Download Chicago Accent Tournament, which will take place later this fall on a stage to be determined, for the grand prize of $333. That's pretty good, right? So if you've been told you have the best accent on the block, you use phrases like drag it through the garden or over by dare, or like last week when the guy said Hoyt, Dotson, and the other guys, then you know what? This is for you. You got a good chance to win some stuff. You call up, we interview you, ask a couple questions, have you read some things, and boom, you're in. Friday night's made. 312-981-7200. Ted McClellan, good to see you, buddy.
Great to be back.
So you were in Rock Island today. What were you doing?
I was just doing some research on WPA projects for another...
For something else you're working on?
For another channel.
Okay. Yes. Oh, for another channel. Good, good. Yeah. Leave it at that.
Not WGN.
No, of course.
I picked up some more Illinois slang. They call the high school Rocky. The nickname of the Rock Island High School is the Rocks. They really reach for that one.
Yeah, right.
And the freshmen there are Pebbles. So the rock theme goes pretty far.
Last week, this was fun. We both walked out of this very excited for the possibilities of this working out. I was surprised the response and the reaction and the differences that they were running.
And I had someone write me to say, you know, we don't say the things that that you say we said. You know, we're being scrutinized.
And you're, this all comes from the work of your book, How to Speak Midwestern, which we've talked about, and we've done a lot on the different region and dialect. But once again, as we set this up, this is about the Chicago accent.
Right.
And the Chicago accent comes from, as you've told us a couple times now, it comes from the Buffalo area. We actually, we have a lot in common with the Northeast.
Well, that's where, I mean, that's where the migration to Chicago came from. People came from New England down the Erie Canal, and the Erie Canal ends at Buffalo, and they got on the boat, crossed the Great Lakes, and they came to Chicago. So that's why we talk more like Buffalo than we talk like people in, well, where I just was, in Rock Island. You know, they don't have that. They don't have that Chicago accent.
Right. 312-981-7200 if you want to try out some of your accent. You can do it for Lou Malnati's Pizza, and there's men's and women's category tonight.
And we're going to have a challenge. We're going to ask people to recite quotes from both mayors daily.
There you go. So that's our challenge tonight. We got some Mayor Daily quotes.
The greatest Chicagoans, or at least the Chicagoish Chicagoans of all time.
And last week we had a couple of great questions. We might bring some back, but the big one was the welcome to Portillo's, may I take your order?
Exactly.
That we'll did that really well.
And we'll have some more vocabulary quiz with some ones we didn't
and
do
I've got
last
some new,
week.
I've got some new questions
yes,
to ask.
And one of the questions was what
I don't want to give it away.
What my emailer brought up.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Why don't we get started? We'll skip.
Right.
And this is actually, I want to start with our first caller because she brings up a good point in the sense that, and we said this at the end last week, that if you did not win, you can try again.
Yeah.
And so let's bring in who I believe had a good chance to win last week and
it,
wants to get
Angela?
Back in. It's Andrea. Andrea from
that's
Naperville,
right?
Andrea,
right?
Andrea,
we
welcome
remember
back.
Her.
How you doing?
Hi, Andrea.
I'm great. How are you guys?
Good.
Good.
So how did it feel to have victory robbed at the last second? What do they say?
I don't have an accent. Yes.
Yeah, she came in and beat you, but but what
I was bummed I didn't get my Lou Malnati's.
Yeah, well,
okay.
All right. Well, okay, but you've learned from last week. You feel like not unlike a Hall of Fame, you didn't get the first ballot, but you got a chance for the second.
Well, sure, but I don't know how I could change anything.
Well, so once again, tell us where you're from and tell us a little bit about yourself.
I grew up in Naperville, but I live in Aurora.
Okay.
And the funnier part of it is I was born in Texas.
Mm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. How long did you live there?
Oh, a couple years.
Okay, so you came up here in time to pick up the accent.
If you say so.
Did you run?
Sounds
did
like
you
it.
Go straight from Texas to Naperville?
Yeah.
Okay. And do you feel like in Naperville and in Aurora in the western suburbs that the people around you have pretty thick Chicago accents?
I don't know.
It's hard to tell. It's hard to tell when you are.
But have you ever lived actually in the city of Chicago?
No, but. No. So close that
right, right, yeah. I mean, the accent's going to be there.
All right. So let's try this. Let me try a question that I'll try. Let me try one of my questions first. You ready? Okay,
yep.
Andrea, you ready for this?
Yep.
All right. What is the name of the ball that you would use playing 16-inch softball?
The softball. I know there's a different name.
And that's pretty good, though. There's a different name. That's okay. That's the way you said softball.
Name. And the funnier part is my daughter plays softball, so I probably should know that.
Well, but. I don't know. She's probably a good player. All right. What do you got?
I can give her a little easier one for us to remember. All right. There's said to be a highway that's a dividing line between the Chicago area and downstate Illinois. And so, say, downstate Illinois is south of what? What is this highway?
I-80.
Yes.
You said that it was like one syllable. It was I-80.
I-80.
I like that.
That's a good point
all
for
right.
you.
Andrea, I'm rooting for you. I liked you last week. I thought that you had a chance to win it. And I think this week you're already, because you're back in the running, For a Lou Malnati's pizza. Andrea, thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Justin.
Oh, that's
thanks,
great.
Guys.
Thank you. I like Andrea. She's,
yeah, me too.
That's a classic Chicago accent.
And just calling in for a pizza every week is a classic Chicago attitude. Plugging away.
Yes, there you go. All right, let's keep it going. Let's go to Charlie. Charlie, welcome to the Chicago Accent Challenge.
Hi, Charlie.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Hey. So, Charlie, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where do you live, and how long you lived there?
Actually, I grew up in on the north side of Chicago.
What parish?
And, actually, St. Mary's.
Okay, there you go. All right. And you still live there?
No. Actually, I'm up in by Gurnee.
Okay. All right.
Where'd you go to high school?
Loyola.
Okay.
Strong.
Yeah.
Right away, I'm like, that's Chicago. Loyola.
Loyola. Yeah.
Yeah.
Loyola.
Go Ramblers.
Loyola. Okay.
I know it's a college, not the high school, but go yeah. Ramblers. Anyway.
Go Ramblers, right. But that's
right,
different. Yeah.
Right, right.
All right, Charlie. Okay, so you heard our questions before, but why don't we do this? Why don't I ask you the same question? 16 softball. What's the name of the ball? What's the brand name of the ball that you use in 16 in softball?
No brainer. Clincher.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. There you go, buddy. All right. So Charlie's got the clincher.
My friend's going to be happy about that.
Yeah, right? And that kills our question for the rest of the night.
Oh, yeah. All right. I guess I got it. Right. There are many places, because Chicago has so many diagonal streets, many places where three streets intersect. But what is
Elston?
What is the real six corners?
Oh.
I know this
that's
one.
That's a tough one. Oh, my God. You got me.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't give it away.
All right. Well, someone
use that one a different way.
I would say Elston again, but
yeah. No, it's not Elston.
Elston's not in there, but that Elston is a Elston.
Oh,
is a grand.
Lincoln. Lincoln.
No,
Lincoln.
It's not Lincoln either.
Yeah. You're on your way. There's only one or two left now. You pretty much got
him. Should we ask him to read a quote?
Yeah. Why don't we do that, Charlie?
Yeah.
Read a quote.
Cool.
All right. We're gonna have people read quotes from one of the dailies.
Okay.
Read this one.
Go ahead.
Go scrutinize yourself. This is Daily the Younger.
This is Daily M.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Go scrutinize yourself. I get scrutinized every day.
Go scrutinize yourself. I get scrutinized every day.
Yeah, close enough. Yeah.
Close enough. There you go. Thanks, Charlie. Thanks for playing.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. We got the information we need from you. We appreciate it. Charlie calling in. 312-981-7200. Your lines are lit up tonight. They're ready to rock. We'll take a quick break so we can stay on time tonight. Ted McClellan here. We're doing the Chicago Accent Challenge. Stay with us.
All right. Favorite act of Benny. Favorite drink or Bulls. Bears, Hawks, Sox, Bulls. Play a little poker. Spend time with the wife. Take her out to Bennigan's. See if they cook chops right. Go and get a laser disc. Projection screen TV. Portillo's Italian beef. And a movie star Tommy. I love it. Serengeti is the theme song for the Chicago Accent Challenge, as he should be. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've got jammed packed lines right now, but let's get right to it. Ted McClellan is here. He's the author of How to Speak Midwestern. We're picking the best Chicago accent tonight. Round two, the winner gets a pizza and be entered into the citywide tournament that we're putting together for the grand prize of $333. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Karen. Karen, kick us off. Karen, where are you from? What parish are you from? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I'm from the south side all my life. I grew up in the Roseland area. And St. Peter and Paul Parish, St. Anthony's, and now St. Alexander's and Palos Heights.
Okay,
welcome.
All right, good. Thanks, Karen.
And
thanks for the
all
setup.
My life, everybody always tells me, even when I was away at college, my friends on my dorm room, the one girl, would have her parents from Kenosha, Wisconsin, come over, and she would ask me questions just so I would talk so she could hear my Southside Chicago accent. I don't think I have one, but everybody tells me I do, so I just thought I'd call in.
All right, well, we're going to do the same thing.
I love it. Thanks, Karen. That was great. All right, so, Ted, why don't you kick us off?
All right,
give Karen the challenge.
We'll ask you a Chicago vocabulary question. This is a game played by flinging a rubber ball against a set of concrete steps or a ledge. If an opposing player catches a rebound, it's an out, and singles, doubles, triples, and home runs are scored if the ball passes predetermined landmarks.
Oh, my God.
I don't know that one. I played that. I don't know what you call it.
No?
Yeah. I mean,
don't give it away.
Okay.
No, that's not it.
I don't know.
All right.
I knew softball.
I know it.
Oh, somebody Badish knows it. Knows it. All
Roger
right.
Badish knows it.
All right.
All right, hold on, Roger. Don't get crazy.
All right. We're going to ask you to read a quote from the first Mayor Daley here. The policeman isn't there to create disorder. The policeman is there to preserve disorder.
The policeman isn't there to create disorder. The policeman is there to what?
Preserve disorder.
Preserve disorder.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. My dad used to be old Mayor Daley's bodyguard. I used to sit in his chair.
Really?
Oh, that's so great.
Wow. Well, wow. He had a great Chicago accent. And I bet your dad did, too.
Yeah,
he did.
All right. Well, Karen, thank you for the info. We appreciate it. This was good.
Thank you, Karen.
All right. Karen, that's strong. She had a good accent there. You can hear it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's keep going. Let's go to Madeline. Madeline, what parish are you from? And tell us a little about yourself.
I was born in Bucktown.
Okay.
And lived on the far northwest side, St. Eugene Parish.
Oh, I love it already.
Yeah.
And now I live in Algonquin.
Okay. All right. Well, since you're a north sider, we'll ask that same question again. What is the real Six Corners?
I'm not sure. It's been a long time since I was there, and I didn't drive at the time.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. I got one for you. Ready?
All right.
Madeline, what are the ingredients to Chicago hot dog?
Oh, wow. Hot dog, bright green relish, mustard, dill pickle, sport pepper, onions, and mustard. I think I said mustard.
Yeah. It's close. That's close. You're missing
and a poppy seed bun.
Yeah, poppy seed bun. I think she left out celery salt. Yeah.
Salt and the wedge tomatoes, but that's okay. That's okay. All right. Yeah. Well, that's good, Madeline. Automatically, by just saying those things,
you
gave us a good indication of your accent. Do people say that you have a Chicago accent?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right. My last question for you, Madeline. 85 Bears or 96 Bulls?
85 Bears.
All right. There you go. Bears. All right, Madeline. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. She's great. Oh, man. I'm telling you. Yeah. She sounded like every aunt that I have. Like that was
she's
every...
She's a front runner.
She's a front runner. There you go. 312-981-7200. Let's sneak one more in. Let's go to Kathleen. Kathleen, what parish are you from? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am from the parish in Chicago.
Okay.
Which parish?
It's the St. Mary's.
Okay.
Okay. Where do you live now?
I'm currently out in Sugar Grove.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I love Sugar Grove. Okay.
Love Sugar Grove, yeah.
What's not to love? All right, so let's ask you the same question. What ingredients are in a Chicago hot dog?
I'll tell you what the ingredients is. It's drag it through the garden, baby. It's drag it through the garden. It's also the relish. It's the onions. It's the pickle. It's also the mustard. No ketchup allowed. And also, let me think. Right. Tomato for sure, and a cucumber.
All right, okay. That's glass. We'll take the cucumber.
Okay.
All right.
Here, can you read this quote from the younger Mayor Daley? Here. What am I supposed to do? Take my pants off?
Just read it back to
just
us.
Read it
that's
back
in
to us.
Mayor Daley quotes. Tonight.
Pants off.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Great, Keith.
Wait,
thanks, Kathleen.
Pants off.
Yes. You got it. Thank you.
Wait, am I done? Chicken in the car. The car won't go. That's how you spell Chicago.
Ah, there you go.
Okay.
Thanks, Kathleen. That was great. 312-981-7200. We're at the halfway point here. If you think you got better than Andrea or Karen or Madeline or Kathleen or Charlie, the field is open right now, Ted. I feel like there's an opportunity to slide in and get a Lou Malnati's. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll get the news. Stay with us.
Favorite actor, Farina, dandruff, tons, brats, chops, dogs, they're done. Favorite coach, Dicka, vacation place, Conson, sausage, Johnson, chicken, Swanson's. Other actor, Behringer, linebacker, Buckus, chopped, peppers, tomatoes, onions.
Serengeti, that's such a great... You got to go check that, Dennehy, that song out. If you don't have it, downloaded. Come on. 312-981-7200. Ted McClellan in studio. He's the author of How to Speak Midwestern. He's the judge tonight in our second edition of the Chicago Accent Challenge. The winners tonight get in the men's and women's category, get a pizza, and they get entered into the bigger tournament at the end of the year that is for the grand prize of $333.
Right.
Right. All right, let's get back into it. Everybody's on the line. It's jammed. So let's go to Linda. Linda, you've been holding patiently. Linda, tell us where you're from, what parish you're from, and a little bit about yourself.
Hi, guys. Okay, hi. I grew up on Chicago and Pulaski, Our Lady of the Angels Parish.
Oh.
And then I was in Narrows for a little while.
And where?
And right now I'm in LaGrange.
Okay. If you win this pizza, what do you want on it?
What do I want on it?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. The work. Guys, the work.
Yeah?
Give us
some toppings.
So I would like sausage, onion, and garlic, okay?
Okay.
But I want to ask you something. It's Six Corners, Irving, yeah. Milwaukee, and Cicero.
Winner! Yes!
Yeah.
All right.
Wait, the game you're talking about, is that called 7-Up?
No, but close.
That's not 7-Up in my neighborhood.
Okay, I think it's got different words in different neighborhoods, but there's one I'm looking for.
Gangway, guys.
Yes, the narrow space between. We were going to ask that one. You beat it. You beat us to it. You should be judging this
psychic.
Game.
I knew you were going to ask it.
Yeah.
love it. Now you're nailing it here, Linda. Well, all right, Linda.
I'm cleaning my daughter's room out. It's a surprise. She's coming home tomorrow morning. I'm cleaning her office out.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to you guys, and I'm having a blast. So thank you.
Okay,
all
thank
right.
you for
thank
calling.
Thank you. Thanks, Linda. Appreciate it. She's great.
Have a nice evening.
You
good
too.
Night. That was good. No,
all right.
She was
good, right?
I think
that could have put her into the lead, especially knowing Six Corners.
I know, right? She was ready to go. All right, let's make a shift real quick to the men's side.
All right, men's division.
So the men's, let's go to Patrick. Patrick, tell us where you're from. And what parish, and a little bit about yourself.
Well, I spent most of my life over by St. Hedwig's, you know, in Bucktown.
Okay.
By Webster and Honoray.
Okay.
Ah, all right. I like that.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. Well, maybe you can give us the answer to what's the street game played by flinging a rubber ball against a set of concrete steps or a ledge.
You know, I've been thinking about that. Is it pinner?
Yes.
You know?
There you go.
You throw the ball off the wall off the side of the school, you know?
Right. That's exactly what we were looking for.
All right, there you go.
All right, man, and now we'll ask you to read a quote from old man Daly. Let me find it. They have vilified me. They have crucified me. They've even criticized me.
They crucified, vilified, and what?
And even criticized me.
So they vilified, they crucified, and criticized me.
Yes. Yes.
Is that all right?
That's great. That's great.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
Hey, Patrick, if you win tonight, what are you going to put on your pizza?
Well, Justin, I got to go with the sausage, green pepper, and onion.
Yeah, all right. All right.
So good. Patrick, thanks for calling.
All right, great job, Patrick. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. That was good.
That puts, I mean, the men's category right now is Charlie and Patrick. Patrick takes the lead.
Yeah, I'd say
no
I
doubt
agree.
About it. But let's keep going because there's more. Let's go to Bill. Bill, where are you from? Give us the parish and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello.
Hi, Bill.
I'm from St. Barnabas on the south side.
Okay.
Well, we got a bunch of south side questions, buddy.
Yeah.
You're going to love this.
I'm a true south sider, still live there.
Okay.
Okay. What do people call St. Xavier University for short?
Zavs.
Yeah, there you go. You are a true south sider.
Okay.
Yep, I remember when it was all girls.
Okay, there you go. I'll give you one here. From where you're at, without using an expressway, how do you get to the Tribune Tower just using side streets?
You don't go to the Tribune Tower.
I think that's the best answer we've gotten yet. Yeah, because nobody works here anymore.
You don't cross the bridge.
Yeah.
You don't cross the bridges.
Yeah,
right?
You go to 79th Street, that's the end of the world.
Yeah.
79th Street, right. I love it. That's so good.
Yeah, because, you know, we need to bring back the Daily Cal.
Yeah.
So You don't have to read the Tribune.
The story that was always told to me, my dad always said that the bus turns around at 79th Street for a reason.
Yeah.
The Western Avenue bus stopped at 79th Street and turned around and came back south. And that was the end of the world.
Yeah. You don't need to come up here.
Did the Daily Cal, was that in your neighborhood or was that just further east?
The what?
Daily Calumet, the newspaper.
Oh, the Calumet was the east side.
Oh, yeah. All right. So that's another thing we're going to ask. Where is the east side?
The east side is from 87th Street south along the lakefront.
Yeah, exactly.
There you
Very
go.
Very good. It's
good
not,
stuff.
Not near Millennium Park like they're trying to say now.
No.
All right, Bill.
No.
Sounds good, Bill. Thanks for calling, buddy. All right. Great job.
That was good, man. That was really good. All right. So this is good. Let's do one more. Let's do Jim. Jim. Tell us
how you guys. Hey, how you guys doing? I just come home and I heard you guys talking, so I wanted to jump in.
All right,
you definitely did want to jump in, buddy.
All right, where do you want to know?
Where are you from?
I'm a Southsider. I'm in the area of St. Barnabas, but I live in Queen of Martyrs.
Okay,
it's on 11th Street, just east of Zavs, St. Zavs College.
All right,
and what else you want to know?
All right, here's a little more complicated Chicago slang question. This was just in the news. Gary McCarthy, when he got fired over the Laquan McDonald video, what's it called during a political scandal when an underling takes the fall for his boss's misdeeds? He said to wear what?
He took the heat. He wore the jacket.
Yes!
You wore the jacket. Good job.
All right.
You're a champ.
Hey, listen, that game against when you bounce the rubber ball.
Yeah.
In my neighborhood, we used to call it bouncer flies are out.
Okay.
Does that ring a bell?
I think it's got a different name in every neighborhood. Because I've heard it called ledge. I've heard it called three out.
Yeah, we used to call it bouncer. And we used to play fast pitching. Do you know what that is?
Fast pitch softball.
No, fast pitching is when you drop.
Oh.
We didn't have any baseball fields. We drew a square, knees to shoulders, and we threw a rubber ball against the... to play fast pitching. That's what it was.
Fast pitching.
All right,
Jim. You have shown us that you are the true front runner.
Okay.
And we appreciate the call. So all right.
Hey, I listen to your program every day. I love it. You talk about everything.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate that, man. Thanks for calling.
And that's you should take the 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock.
Oh well, it's somebody else's shift. And we're comfortable where we're at.
You're just showing off now by saying 3 o'clock here.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, you should take, I don't know, random time. 3 o'clock. That's great. 312-981-7200. All right, we'll take our last break. We'll come back. We'll do a little rapid fire. We still got some people on the line. I still got some questions as well, so let's get to it. Stay with us.
85 Walter Ruse, old style pack of crews. Go to Ace, no tolls, and weed whacker fuel. 85 Bear Super, stay Seattle's got ruined for the basement.
It's a download 720 WGN. It's the Chicago Accent Challenge. Let's go to Megan. Megan, where are you from? Give us your parish and give us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm from Evanston originally, and I live in Chicago the last 20 years.
Okay.
All right. Let me ask you a couple questions. A 16-inch softball, what's it called?
16-inch softball?
Uh-huh.
Mush ball?
Well, that's not the right term, but I know what you're going with.
Okay.
What's on a Chicago hot dog?
Oh, and I didn't tell you my parish is.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, what parish is it?
Oh, and Clincher.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm from St. Joan of Arc in Evanston, and now I'm from Queen of All Saints.
All right, there you go. And then then what goes on a Chicago hot dog?
Chicago hot dog, celery salt, mustard, sport peppers, a tomato, poppy seed bun.
All right, you got them all.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
I think we got enough. Megan, thanks for calling.
Okay.
All right. That's fun. She's good. Really want to get her parish in. Let's go to Bob. Bob, what are you thinking? Where are you from? Give us your parish and tell us a little bit of something about yourself.
St. Christina's in Mount Greenwood on the southwest side of Chicago.
Mm. Okay. All right. We got a quick question for you. How much money is a fin?
Five bucks.
Okay. All right. I got a question for you. You ready, Bob?
Sure.
Finish this saying. Are you ready?
Okay.
Solozzi Edelson Chevrolet in Elmhurst at York and Roosevelt Roads
where you always save more money.
Hey. That's good, Bob.
We want a Vito and Nick's pizza, not a Lumalmati's.
Wait, who's in the background there?
Who's that?
That's my wife. She made me call in.
All right, what's her name?
I
like
that. She may be a contender for the women's.
We gotta like that accent.
You can win two pizzas in this
on the line.
Family.
Yeah. What's your name?
Noel.
Yeah. Okay, Noel. And
I'm from St. Bede.
Okay. St. Allers. Okay. What do you know? Tell me how to get to the Trib Tower without using the expressways.
I don't know. I don't.
She doesn't go to the Trib Tower. She doesn't go north.
No.
Do you want to go north of 79th? Tell me how to get to 79th Street without using expressways.
Down Western Avenue.
Yeah. All right. That's too easy. Yeah.
There you go. All right. He does it great. I like this. I like the tag team. I think it's great. Awesome. All right. Good stuff. Vito and Nick's. Got it.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
That was great. All right. There you go. The families are getting into it. Charlie, tell us what parish you're from and a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I'm from St. Pascal's.
Okay.
And I lived up on the northwest side. I'm in Joliet now.
All right.
Ooh. Okay.
Hey, don't take that personally. I had to move.
You had to move?
Yeah. We needed a bigger house, and Joliet was it.
All right. Well, here's a question. What would you call a sleeveless undershirt?
A dago tee.
Yeah. Yeah. Points for you.
With such confidence. I like it.
Yeah. Okay.
And what do you got on a Chicago hot dog? What do you put on a Chicago hot dog?
I could put anything on here but ketchup, man.
Yeah.
God forbid you put ketchup. Hey, that's another thing, too. I lived up in the northwest side, so I always ordered sausages. If you live in the south side, you order the sausage.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And
one other thing, too. I'd also, with that Chicago hot dog and that sausage, I'd like a Meisterbrau.
You're going deep. All right. And so what's the
Do
name?
Do they even brew that anymore?
I don't think so. Let me give you a name.
No,
okay. How do you pronounce this street? W-A-B-A-S-H.
Wabash.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of defunct beers, what was the beer they brewed on the southeast side where they had a puzzle underneath the bottle cap?
Oh, I don't know that.
Oh, man.
It used to come in the yellow kind of crate. There'd be 12 of them.
No, that one I didn't know because, like I said, man, here's this thing. I had a buddy of mine whose dad worked for Meisterbrau. Yeah. He'd get Dunnet cans for a nickel. So guess what we drank?
Yeah, Meisterbrau.
All right, thanks, Charlie. Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling, bud.
All right.
Appreciate it.
No problem, guys.
All right, let's try to get Kathy in, then we got to go. Kathy,
all right.
What parish are you from? Tell us a little about yourself.
St. Margaret of Scotland.
Oh, okay. Okay, so Kathy, Solosi, Edelson, Chevrolet, and Elmhurst, and York, and Roosevelt Roads.
Yes.
And then you got to finish
it. Then they were out there in Elmhurst.
Yeah,
that's right. Okay, 16-inch softball. You play what part? What's the best park to play 16-inch softball?
Oh my, Archer Park.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
All
right, Teddy, you got one more, and we got to go.
All right, if you're going to play basketball, what do you put on your feet?
Sneakers.
All right, there we go. Thanks, okay. Kathy. Thanks for calling in. All right, you know, I got to say, you know, we kind of narrowed it down on the men's side to Jim, Bill,
mm-hmm.
and then I think Charlie coming in here at the end.
Having a buddy of mine, that was a good one.
Yeah, and then Bob is, I mean, there's a lot of, I think Jim did the Zavs and wear a jacket.
Yeah, I want to give it to Jim just for knowing
where
the jacket.
Jim wins on the men's side, and then on the women's side you had Madeline, who had the hot dogs and who I said sounded like my aunt.
Yeah.
And also Linda, who got Pulaski, she's from Pulaski, got the gangway, and also got the six corners.
Yeah, all right, give it to Linda.
Linda
and Jim, congratulations.
Linda and Jim get the Lou Malnati's pizza. Of course, Lou Malnati's home is Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Order online at loumalnati's.com. The Chicago Accent Challenge, Ted, is killing it.
Exactly.
All these people called in tonight to...
I cannot wait for the finals.
The finals for $333 coming up at the end of 2018, and we continue to do this. Now, we'll take a little bit of a break because we got a couple Fridays off here, but we will be back at some point to continue the Chicago Accent Challenge. Ted McClellan is the author of How to Speak Midwestern. Ted, Great job.
Great.
That's going to do it for the download tonight. Patty Vasquez up next with Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. Hi, Patty.
Hello. You know what's exciting? The Billy Goat's back. The Billy Goat is back. It's back. Open. You know what they did? First of all, the lighting is amazing. They changed all of that. Really nice. They cleaned it up. They obviously did a little sandblasting, but half the restaurant is now bathrooms. Like, they expanded, but they have a massive, a hallway with a couple bathrooms.
Oh my gosh, I gotta check that out.
Like, stalls and everything. I don't know, isn't it weird when you're excited that someplace has nicer bathrooms?
No,
the place looks great.
It's not weird.
It's back.
It's back.
The Billy Goat is back, everybody.
That's great.
Cheeseburgers. Just in time for St. Patrick's Day.
Were you down there tonight?
I stopped there on the way back. No, because people don't know it's back yet. Oh, so it's back.
It's like the right now's the time.
Yes. So all go, right. yeah.
There you go.
Tomorrow will be packed. We have Senator Biss on the air after the 11:05 news and 11 o'clock news. And then we have Attorney General candidate Renato Mariotti on at 11:30. And then, of course, we'll do some Irish toast with our ambassador from Telemordu. And then we have our panel for primary talk. So
awesome. Sounds like a great show.
All the good stuff. So have a great St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Yes, have a great weekend.
Bye, Pete. I'm stalking your dogs now, by the way, and your cats, just so you know.